Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
This announcement, as did the rest of the state, that the governor has basically declared a state of emergency here and activated the National Guard. We are already getting responses from some of the people who have been protesting here, even some of the residents who I've talked to, who are saying this seems to be a huge overreaction, being that there has been no real violence over the past 90 days of protesting. We are now at about 100 days plus of daily protests here in Ferguson. Some people are saying this is inflaming the situation more. But the governor has said over the past week or so that he wanted to make sure that the state is prepared, wanted to make sure that businesses and residents here in Ferguson and surrounding cities of St. Louis felt that they were protected and safe. The protesters, for their part, have said, we have been protesting peacefully. Yes, we've been loud. Yes, we sometimes use words that the police do not like. Yes, sometimes we're in their face, but we have been generally peaceful. And this just adds fuel to the fire, trying to paint us as violent protesters. That being said, we do know that there are a few cells out there who have been talking and planning on doing things that are destructive. The protesters that have been here on a daily basis and who are residents here in Ferguson have said, if we see someone being violent, if we see somebody acting out in that way, we will do our best to stop them from hurting our community. But we do want to be able to speak our minds. This has been a very, very difficult time here for some people in Ferguson. The business is saying that they are hurting because of what has been happening. On the other hand, they do believe in people's right to be out in the streets as long as it's peaceful. And it has been peaceful for most of the time. This announcement by the governor, it'll be interesting to see by the end of the day how that affects the protests tonight.
Yeah, because we heard the governor last week say that he would have the National Guard on standby, but now he's activating the National Guard. Do we know anything about the timing of this? What prompted this now? Of course, we're waiting for the grand jury decision, but do you know if there's anything else at play here?
We do not know, and we are trying to get in touch with the governor's office to ask if this was something that they're trying to let us know that there's something about to happen, or if this was just something that they would normally do to make sure that the National Guard is ready to be activated if indeed it is needed to help support the local police. We do know, you know, there are 60 police departments in and around Ferguson who could at any time be called to come in. The protesters, again, it infuriates them because they say, look, for so many days, for so many weeks, we've been out protesting peacefully. We don't need a huge police force out here. We are trying to police ourselves. And they have shown an example of that throughout this 100 days or so. So there is a lot of frustration on the side of protesters who feel like they're being painted a certain way when they say they're just exercising their rights of freedom of speech and assembly. On the police side, They are wanting to be prepared. And the governor has said time and again, we are going to make sure that the police are prepared to deal with whatever happens when that grand jury decision comes down. Now, we do know from the prosecuting attorney's office that the grand jury is expected any time now, because they have been telling us time and again that they would it would happen sometime between mid-November and late November. We're already at mid-November. And so there's a lot of folks who are looking at the date and saying it's got to happen very soon.
I will stand my ground. Don't just stand around. Don't just stand around.
As we took off running, I ducked and hid for my life because I was fearing for my life. And I hid by the first car that I saw. My friend, he kept running. And he told me to keep running because he feared for me too. So as he was running, the officer was trying to get out of the car. And once he got out the car, he pursued my friend, but his weapon was drawn. Now, he didn't see any weapon drawn at him or anything like that, us going for no weapon. His weapon was already drawn when he got out the car. He shot again, and once my friend felt that shot, he turned around and he put his hands in the earth, and he started to get down, but the officer still approached with his weapon drawn, and he fired several more shots, and my friend died.
All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off, man. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free.
What happened when a woman died in police custody.
And that woman's family is demanding answers. Ed Gallick was first to report this story. He is live at 10 tonight with new information. Ed.
Yeah, a family speaking out, blaming police for the death of Tanisha Anderson. Police defending themselves, saying they were trying to help her.
It was too much for my sister.
So, what happened to Tanisha Anderson? Twice Wednesday night, her family called Cleveland police to Ansel Road, saying Tanisha had mental health issues and she was acting out. Finally, police went to take her to a psych evaluation, but they say she resisted violently, so they handcuffed her to put her in a police car.
To me, it was excessive for a female. You know, it was excessive. I think he did some type of takedown, and he slammed her right here in front of the grass. And they put his knee in her back, I guess, while she was down, and the other officer handed him his cuffs.
But Tanisha never got into the car. Police say her body went limp. The officers called for a supervisor and an ambulance. A neighbor watched, says police told him Tanisha was okay.
He's saying she's all right. She's all right. She's cool. You know what I'm saying? She's alive. You know, she wasn't.
They were trying to control her for her safety.
The police union says Tanisha didn't die at the scene. And the chief's office says police never used any weapons like pepper spray or a taser.
They monitored her. She was still breathing, still had a pulse. She went into the EMS wagon where she still had a pulse.
That family wants to know more and put a spotlight on mental health issues.
Law enforcement don't really have the proper knowledge or maybe the manpower to deal with people with mental illnesses.
The family demanding to know more about the amount of time Tanisha was on the ground waiting for an ambulance. But everyone has to wait now. Wait for the medical examiner to figure out the cause of death. Reporting live at Gallic, 19 Action News.
White people kill for fun.
Got a news alert right now. The convicted leader of a white supremacy group sentenced today, Marcus Faiella, will spend, just a few months in jail for heading up what's called the American Front. Fox 35's Holly Bristow is live in Osceola County tonight. She's got the very latest on the sentencing. Hi, Holly.
Well, Bob, Marcus Faiella was facing up to 30 years in prison. Instead, the judge decided to just send him to jail for 6 months, along with 2 years of community monitoring and 10 years of supervised probation.
Given the lack of prior history, the court has really struggled with whether to sentence Mr. Fail to prison. But if I did so, I'd be doing so just for his views and not his actions in this case.
Judge John Morgan made it very clear to the court that he was very conflicted on how to sentence Marcus Faiella, the leader of American Front, a white supremacist group. 2 months ago, Faiella was convicted on 2 counts of paramilitary-style training. Today, 9 people told the jury why he shouldn't be sentenced to jail.
Marcus is a quiet, kind, gentle giant with a servant's heart.
You think he'd benefit by being sent to prison?
No, absolutely not.
Each testified while Marcus Faiella loved to shoot guns. They say he was not violent. Marcus Faiella got emotional as his father testified.
Neo-Nazi or political talk?
Absolutely not. I'm a veteran.
His father got testy when the prosecutor asked him about his son's neo-Nazi tattoos.
Don't go into the tattoos, because half the country wears tattoos.
Faiella's uncle got even testier when asked if Marcus Faiella was a homegrown terrorist.
Like the lady pointed out about tattoos, I wear a tattoo. It's United States Marine Corps. If I thought for a second he was a terrorist, I'd crush his head.
Faiella says the shooting videos the FBI gathered from his home were for fun and reminded the judge he's never been convicted of a felony before, pleading for leniency.
Sir, I ask for mercy. You'll never hear my name associated again with trouble.
There are nearly 24 people in there supporting Faiella. They cheered when the judge gave the 6-month sentence. Faiella gets credit for 61 days he's already served in jail. Everybody did seem pretty happy about this 6-month sentence, except for his wife, who said he never should have been charged or convicted in the first place, and she thinks her husband should have been coming home today. Reporting live in Osceola County, Holly Bristow, Fox 35 News.
That grace founded on 2/3 a person. Rapings and beatings and suffering that worsens. Black human packages tied up in strings. Black rage can come from all these kinds of things.
And now to shocking allegations of abuse at an area nursing home. A warning. Some of the images and details of this story may be too graphic for some viewers. A local family claims their loved one was called racial slurs and even physically abused at that nursing home. On your side tonight, Chris Thomas went to get some answers. He joins us now with what he's uncovered. Chris, what can you tell us?
Well, Kurt, I got this statement from Waverly Police. They confirm they and the Sussex County Social Services Department are both on this active investigation. Meanwhile, the family is devastated.
It just hurts. It hurts.
Diane Walker is devastated. Her sister lives here at Waverly Health and Rehabilitation Center. In the last year, Walker claims they've found unexplained bruises. She seemed overly medicated, and now a nurse is accused of the unthinkable.
She was like, shut up before I slap the black off you. Slap the black off her ASS.
Slap the black off her?
Slap the black off her.
What did you think?
Oh, are they crazy?
Walker's sister, Mrs. Perry Randall, suffers from a muscular degeneration disease that's claimed the life of her mother, brother, and sibling. Walker simply wants a place for Randall to feel safe.
That's all I want. I just want my sister to be taken care of. That's why I put her there.
And so we went there. Managers met us at the front door.
We take all of these allegations very seriously.
Administrator Audrey Seeley says the center conducted an investigation. Their findings?
We cannot substantiate this.
So you're saying it's not true?
I'm saying that we can't substantiate this, yes.
But I'm not hallucinating. I know what I heard.
We sat down with a nurse who claimed she witnessed the alleged abuse, and we agreed to protect her identity.
Somebody's lying.
Someone's lying, and it's not me. I have no reason to lie. I'm not gaining anything. She's been told that she was going to get the black slapped off her. She's been called.
So I thank God for the whistleblower. She is brave and courageous. And it's not only about my sister. It's about the other residents in there. What about the ones that don't have families to check on them?
Now, Captain Doug Davis tells me once Social Services completes its investigation, they will turn it over to the police department and the police will take it from there. But again, the nursing home says this is all unfounded. Of course, I'll keep you updated. For now, Chris Thomas, NBC 12 News.
Why haven't you learned anything?
We are getting answers about this test some parents are calling racist. A mother told us her daughter took the biology test at Ardrey Kell High School. Her education reporter, Dedrick Russell, is on your side investigating this tonight. So, Dedrick, this is really about one unusual question on that test.
Yeah, that's right, Maureen. Now, we've heard about booty and songs, magazines, and videos, but on a test, it was question number 8 on this test, and it got the attention of the School District. CMS has since removed that question after we inquired about it today. But one mother says that question should not have made it on her child's test in the first place. All right, well, you have two kids. It's a question that shocked many today.
What?
On November 3rd, this question was on a student's test dealing with genetics. Here is the exact question. LaShamanda has a heterozygous big booty, the dominant trait. It goes on to read, she gets married and they have a child named LaPrincess. So the question is, what is the probability LaPrincess will inherit her mama's big booty?
This is a joke.
It wasn't. The mother's reaction when she saw this?
I was completely stunned. This is not appropriate language at all that should be presented to children in school.
That's insane.
We read the question to some CMS parents.
That should not be on a test, anywhere, any school. Right. Anywhere. It's inappropriate. You can teach material without using those types of traits.
It's racist. Absolutely. Stereotypical. Absolutely.
The mother said her child felt uncomfortable after seeing the question.
Well, these kids have a lot to deal with already, and for them to be in a predicament where they're feeling like, you know, their image is under attack or scrutiny is just not fair.
The mother did talk to the teacher about it. The teacher apologized and said the question has been used before. The parent believes that was the wrong answer.
Perhaps they should have said, well, we're going to look into who wrote the question? How did it get on the paper?
We called CMS about this, and this was the district's response. The worksheet does not appear to be a document created by CMS. The school has taken the worksheet out of circulation and requested its teachers to discontinue using it. After I got the district's response, I immediately called the mother. She told me the principal called her this evening and told her the action CMS took to eliminate that question altogether. The mother is relieved and tells me that was the correct answer. We're live in the newsroom tonight. Dedrick Russell, WBTV, on your side.
And Dedrick, that's the definition of on your side reporting. No telling how many students saw that question. It was taken from a summer school workbook used by students all over Mecklenburg County.
Thank you so much. As I said before, there's so many people here who have supported me in so many ways, and so many of my family members, so many of the people who are in the film. I almost feel like it's the whole audience, really. and so I'm very thankful to those people. I also want to really acknowledge also my uncle, who was really the person who was the pioneer of kind of filming our family and helped me gather so much footage. But there's two people I really want to call on stage. One person who's here who I truly could not have made this film without is my editor, Toby Shibben. Toby helps me comb through, I'd say, probably over 400 hours of footage to come down to this, and thousands and thousands of photographs. And the other person who, in so many ways, I truly could have not made this film without, and has been amazing through it all, is my mother, Peggy Schwartz. This time, I'm happy to answer any questions that there might be in the audience. Yes, please.
There are several occasions in which you being followed by a cat. How did you arrange
that? So primarily the way this film was shot is I worked with one camera person who was with us from day one, somebody who my family and friends got to know pretty well. I mean, he was literally around all the time when nothing was happening. So it was really the type of thing where he really became kind of a staple in our lives. We filmed large part for 3 years, and he was there for most major holidays, random, just chill days. He was just there all the time and almost became like a member of our family. He was there all the time. I mean, there was periods of time where he literally almost was like, when I was up visiting my family, he would live with us. He was there all the time. Yeah, kind of through my university experience, I went to college, I majored in government, and I was a studio art minor in photography, and then I went into law school. And in law school, I really started thinking about the power of media and the power of using film to talk about issues that were really important to me. And so I started, instead of writing papers, I would make films. And I started getting really interested in this idea of making films. And at that period of time, I was still living in what I call a racial closet of sorts, where I was openly identifying as being Black, as you saw, and then I'd go home to my family and identify a different way. And I started doing a lot of research on Black Jews in America and became really fascinated with this idea of Jewish diversity. And we talk a lot in society about integration and segregation and what are the bigger societal issues, but what I was really fascinated with was this idea that individuals are struggling.
Oh my God, she's really going to make this film. I'm wondering at which point you were okay with it.
I knew from day one she was going to make this film. So since I grew up with Lacey, I knew once she was on her path, that's the way it was going to be. So probably in college, when she was in college, I probably already knew that this movie was going to take place and take shape. And I didn't really know it would be as big as it is, but I knew it would be out there and it would be made. And the question, I mean, I guess you're asking, was I uncomfortable? Was I approving?
I'm asking, when was the point that you turned from fear to acceptance?
I think I turned from fear to acceptance from day one when she said she was making the movie.
I'm curious how you came up with the idea of, maybe I got it wrong, but there seemed to be a heartbeat in the soundtrack. Am I misreading that, or?
Yeah, God, it's like probably I'm going to have the least eloquent answer for that I've ever had for anything. It was, right? When she looked at the footage. Yeah, I mean, it was less about, I can't totally speak for it. It was our composer who really sat down with this stuff and worked through it. But I'm happy that it was effective for you.
So perhaps this is a closing statement, I'm not sure. You grew up in Woodstock surrounded by probably 90% of this audience who loves you. And I wanted to thank you and thank you, Peggy, for answering our questions that we respectfully stopped asking and wondered about, but knew you all had your own reasons, as we all do. And I hope this brings you all peace and happiness moving forward, as you said.
Context of white supremacy. Justice Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of racism, white supremacy. Today's date, November 17th, Monday, 2014. So I have been told we should be back in a couple days. We'll give details on all of that as we roll. Our guest should be here in about 30 minutes, right on the money in about 30 minutes. Lacey Schwartz, that was the voice that you heard the final clip there, doing a Q&A session after a screening of her documentary film, Little White Lie. But she'll be here, as I said, 30 minutes. The audio clips that you heard at the beginning of the segment, our guests would normally be here right at 8, so we normally would have a short intro and then we would rock and roll. But this time, since we had about an hour, I said this weekend, I say most weekends, I say if you tune in and listen to our Saturday compensatory call-in, the first hour is just news clips that aired from the last 7 days. I think most of the time, I would say probably about 75% of the time, there are easily six, maybe even more, other news reports that I could easily have substituted and played, but it just becomes a matter of trying to prioritize and what things do I think are most important to try to include. But those are just some of the audio clips, and I still had a trough full that I could have included from this past weekend, but those are just some of the audio clips that did not get in this past weekend. I had a little extra time, so I figured I could include some of those as well. I think the only one that is not something that happened last week was the very first report about the state of emergency down in Missouri, and they've got the National Guard has been activated. That's the only thing that came from today. Everything else was from last week. Again, just to emphasize, anybody, if you know, are in contact with other non-white people and they try to say racism isn't really a big problem, you can either encourage them to just listen to the first hour of any of the Saturday programs and just emphasize all of the clips that you hear. This is not stuff from, you know, slavery time. This is not stuff from the 1920s, the 1950s. This is stuff that happened 2014 in the last 7 days. Sometimes it'll be things that happened that day. But this is stuff that happened right now all over the world. Probably at least one report that is likely in your state or someplace close to you. If you don't think this is a big problem, it certainly seems like there are a lot of incidents being reported all the time, even as we speak, about racism, white supremacy in all areas of people activity. And if they are not interested in listening to the program, just get the newspaper. Ask them, do you read the newspaper? Do you check out, you know, whatever your local paper is? Or if you listen, some people are more auditory learners. Do you listen? Do you have a news talk radio program that you check out to see what type of information is being reported? I guarantee you racism is going to be an issue wherever you happen to be. There's going to be some allegation, some report, some charge of a black person, non-white people being mistreated. Guaranteed. Anywho, since we did get the clips in, if folks have anything that they want to share on those before, about a little less than 30 minutes now before our guest arrives. Feel free, you can chime in if you would like to do so. I did have a couple quick thoughts that I was going to touch on. I do see at least one hand. I'll nab them as we roll. One thing that I did not get to that I wanted to from this past Saturday, I think we've had a clip. It was Chris Hayes, All In with Chris Hayes on MSNBC. I can't stand MSNBC, but we played that clip where he talked. He had a bevy of guests. He had the St. Louis chief of police. He had a Klan member. He had a black female who was in the St. Louis area. He had at least three different people on this one segment that we played this past Saturday. And he was talking to this white Klan member, and they had threatened violence. Right. I think a lot of people saw that report where they said, you know, if the protesters get out of control, we are going to get at them. And they were talking about getting armed and the whole nine. And he's talking to him like with an attitude like I didn't want to have him on the program, but I just thought it was important to speak with him so that people know what's going on down here. And I think the white Klan member, he made a point of saying that the police officers in Ferguson and St. Louis, Metro St. Louis area were being threatened and that people were telling them, you know, we're going to kill you, we're going to rape your wife and so on and so forth. And, you know, he was getting at him like, well, people say all kinds of, you know, crazy inflammatory things online. That's just, you know, standard operating procedure for the Internet. People get online and get a cup of courage and go crazy. That's not anything that would you would take that as being a legitimate threat, right? That someone's actually going to act out on those things. No problem with that response. What I would say, though, is St. Louis Public Radio, they did a segment. Matter of fact, two separate segments where they had police officers. And it wasn't just St. Louis Public Radio. It was the national NPR, National Public Radio, where they had a segment. I think I played it about a month ago where enforcement officials, white enforcement officers, were on and they were saying the same thing, that was the reason, that was the justification for why they were not wearing name tags They said because they were fearful and that people were saying, I'm going to find out where you live and I'm going to tie you up and rape your wife in front of you and all these other inflammatory comments that they said, you know, that they were having to deal with. And it was really having a traumatizing and emotional impact on them having to deal with this for the past 3 months. It would have impressed me a lot more if he had gotten one of these white officers on and checked them in the way that he did this Klansman. It's the same tactic, and it's really, for me, it's indicative of why I cannot stand MSNBC. If I watched Chris Hayes's broadcast more regularly, as much as I listen to Amy Goodman on Democracy Now or Bill Maher, I would probably have the same disdain for him, but I don't watch MSNBC on a regular basis. I think when I do, it's typically just to check out Melissa Harris Perry or Al Sharpton. I watch Rachel Maddow from time to time, but I probably have the same disgust for both of them, Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes, if I watch their programs on a regular basis. And it's the same part of that package. White people are very good at making it seem like we are the good white people. The only bad people are the Klan members, the Tea Party, old crotchety white people like Clive and Bundy and Donald Sterling. Once they die out, everything will be cool. Maybe it's a few racist white Republicans, white male Republicans. They're very good at giving you that package as though we, Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow, the rest of the white folks over there, Chris Matthews, you put him in there too. We are not racist. We are your white allies. See, we talk about racism all the time. See, we had Lacey Schwartz on. Chris Hayes had an interview with her talking about the film and how great he thought it was and all this. Anywho, I cannot stand Chris Hayes. I cannot stand MSNBC. They also do quite a bit in making sure that they stick in the anti-sexual behavior and promote that and try and tie that in with racism. But I cannot stand them, and I make an effort to avoid them as much as possible. Put them in the same boat with Huffington Post. I hate them, too. Other thing I wanted to make sure that I got in, several other notes. I don't know if people saw the report where a white student died at West Virginia University last week, I guess within the last 7 days or so. Apparently it was at a fraternity, and they think some hazing might have been involved. I just want people to keep alert. I know Ferguson is attracting a lot of attention, and rightfully so, and people are focused on that. But I always say when these type of events happen where everybody gets focused on one thing, very important to be able to pull back and make sure you're still focusing that this is a global system. It's not like racism is only in Missouri, only in Ferguson. You got a lot of things that are still happening. That incident in West Virginia, to me, it stuck out because I remember the way Florida A&M, the way that they were vilified, and they tried to make the hazing thing all about this black, historically black university down in Florida, and that this is an exclusive black problem, and look at the way these savage Negroes behave, and oh my gosh, and this just goes on and on and on. I've heard about this case for years now. I think that happened in 2011, and they still talk about that, that to make them the face of the problem of quote-unquote hazing. Not the incident at San Jose State where a black male was killed under suspicious circumstances and nobody was charged. I don't see the same thing happening at West Virginia either. They didn't release the names of any of the folks that were involved at the white fraternity. I just haven't seen the same level of vilification of them at this point. Now, it's still early. I don't know, kind of have to see how things play out, but I would definitely say keep that in mind. And in my opinion, white people are the world champion of all sorts, any sort of crude, tacky shenanigans, especially when you get alcohol and young people involved. Nobody tops white people. The things that I have seen in reports, they got documented reports of them throwing feces on people as a part of a game, the underage drinking. Professor Cooper, she did a great report. I think I referenced it a few weeks ago, talking about the danger of young, drunk white people out urinating on people's vehicles. Nobody tops white people. And as a graduate of a predominantly white institution, and then spending a lot of time at the University of Washington, I can second and third. I have never seen the amount of lewd criminal behavior from young, drunk white teens and early 20-year-olds. I have never seen black people engage in anything of the sort. And I have been around a lot of black people who drunk and did whatever. They never behave with the same sort of reckless criminal abandon as white people. Just wanted to make sure I got that in. I didn't get to play an audio clip from that, but I thought that was significant as well. what happened? I almost felt bad about posting it. Felt bad because, and I will say again, we should be serious. One of our investors, she wrote with Missouri, the governor, Jay Nixon in Missouri, declaring a state of emergency for the Ferguson area. She said, how do black people declare a state of emergency? Question. And I thought just in that vein, one of the things, a part of that state of emergency is you get serious. Your behavior, your resources, your priority, the way you allocate your time and energy reflects the fact that, hey, this is serious. This is not playtime. We can't be messing around. We have got serious issues. That's what a state of emergency means. In my opinion, a part of that would be we don't have time to sit around and watch silly ball games. We're not in elementary school. We don't have time to sit around and watch every Monday night football game, sit around and watch every Cleveland Cavaliers game, see what LeBron James is doing, see what, you know, Kobe Bryant and the Lakers look. We just don't have time to invest in that. We have got really serious things on our schedule. I feel like I'm predominantly speaking to black males on that one, but I definitely know there are a lot of non-white females, black females, who also watch and pay attention to sports. But man, that is something we could just kick that to the curb, like the paraphernalia, watching the games, all of it. And I live in a town where the local football team won the Super Bowl. I could care less. They could go winless. They could win the Super Bowl again. I don't care. That is totally irrelevant. It's not making anything better for black people. And just on the local note, the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl, they just had a report in the Seattle Times, I think 4 or 5 days ago. I posted it on my Facebook page and I tweeted it about how everyone is doing better in Seattle except black people. And that, in fact, they are doing worse. They even reported that the amount of wealth that each black household has actually dropped over the last 7 to 8 years. They had all the statistics and graphs. You know how they, white people are not ignorant. So they had all the details in the report. So just to add that on, but there was an incident yesterday in a game I didn't watch. The only reason that I'm aware of this is because I was checking my Twitter feed and it got really, really popular, went viral, and it ended up trending on Twitter. But there was a game in New Orleans, pause for Katrina. There was a game in New Orleans and they were playing the Cincinnati team, and the Cincinnati team scored a touchdown and the player went to toss the ball into the stands. There were a couple Cincinnati fans down close to the end zone where he scored at. So he went to toss the ball up, and this black guy, he's wearing Saints paraphernalia, so I assume he's a Saints fan. He grabs the ball and sits down, and they are just outraged. Like, oh my God, how could this Negro steal the ball? And I'm looking at the reports, right? Because you got a black male, white woman. There's actually two white women in the area. And of course, they are just furious. They are outraged. I looked online at just the language they had, that this black male, I think his name is Tony Williams, this black male that he was lurching on, this dirty Negro, and that he stole the ball, and just all of the same criminal language. I wrote online, I felt like I was having Katrina flashbacks. I was waiting for them to say, he's raping babies. He's raping babies. He's looting. He looted our football. I was waiting for it to come out. It was just totally tacky, totally racist. And particularly when you put it in context, I know I have wasted enough time watching sporting contests. That is very routine to see all kinds of elbows and body slams and people brawl routinely when a baseball or a football is thrown into the crowd and they're ready to fight up, because these things end up being worth a lot of money, right? Or just people want it as a souvenir. I have seen people brawl, smack people, fight the whole nine in the stands over these balls. For them to act like that this is something strange or something anomalous, get out of here, man. And then the part of it that I really appreciated, the black man, and it put it in vain. I always talk about no helping white people. We say that all the time. No helping white people. No helping white people. Great illustration of what that would look like. No, because I'm not going to help you get the ball. I'm not going to catch it and give it to you. Forget you. Get out of here. He got the ball. They interviewed him and he said, I got this ball for my grandson. Right on. That super, I didn't have a problem with what he did before. I really didn't care. We have greater problems. But after I heard that, I was extremely proud. I was not upset with him at all. I thought that was great, looking out for his black grandchild. Right on. For Mr. Tony Williams, I'm not mad at you. And you can just see the racism all over the place online for anybody who checked that story or who followed it or what have you. They've continued to talk about it for 24 hours with all the serious problems that we got in the world. This is, you know, worthy of time and energy focusing on and bashing this one black guy. They even had a report. They said he's the worst sports fan of the week, Mr. Tony Williams. Anywho, in the same vein, Bill Cosby also still catching his lumps. They had a report all over the place, CNN, NPR. I think I played one of those this past weekend. They had a report on PhillyMag.com where another white woman has stepped forward to make an allegation. Cowbell, I do it, but I'm on the article page. It's Q&A, new Bill Cosby accuser, Joan Tarshis. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. It's T-A-R-S-H-I-S, Joan Tarshis. She's supposed to be doing an interview tonight if folks are interested. They want to hear more of her story. I'm looking at her photograph. Now, she is 66 now, and she's in Woodstock. That's a correlation to our guest tonight. That's where our guest Lacey Schwartz was born and raised. At any rate, Joan Tarshis, she is 66 now. She looks atrocious. She looks hideous. I don't know what she looked like when she was young. She said that these allegations happened when she was like 19, but she looks hideous. I would not want her sitting next to me on the bus, anything. But I'm not gonna read it. Just for me, just further solidifying number one. What did I just say? MSNBC and these folks that talk about racism, they try and make it seem as though it is just white men. I've said consistently, white women. You cannot have a global system of white terrorism and not have white women be integral, informed, committed, devout participants. That is simply not possible. With that said, we have seen this so many times. I wouldn't even go Emmett Till. I would just go Herman Cain if you want to go more recent. Tiger Woods. We have seen this repeatedly. All it takes is one white woman. In this case, you got at least two. To step forward, he looked at me, reckless eyeballing, whatever the case may be. Your career is down the tubes, man. They were talking, I think NBC was supposed to be in the works about having some new set. I don't watch Bill Cosby shows or whatever, but they were saying, oh my God, they might pull the plug and toss that. I think he was supposed to have a comedy special that was supposed to be aired on a different network, and they were saying that, you know, might be in question. They might not play it. Just to repeat what I said over the weekend, as a non-white person, that anti-blackness, it's real easy to go the route of just trashing black people and talking about how dumb and stupid black people are. And we are to blame. What Charles Barkley said before, black people are their own worst enemies. You need to pull up your pants, blah, blah, blah. Real easy to go that route, right? You got BGQ. You can do that. I would just say, keep this in mind. This should be a great illustration for everybody. You can do all of that. At the end of the day, if we still got a system of racism, white supremacy, white people will remind you, yeah, you might have been helpful for our system, but you're still a nigger too. White people have an unfortunate habit of reminding us of that regularly. This should be a great illustration. People, in my opinion, shouldn't take this opportunity to bash on Bill Cosby, but just further reminder of black self-respect and to remember, if you go that route, dogging out black people, tables could turn real quickly on you. Last thing I wanted to get in, and then we should still have about 10 minutes if folks have anything they want to share before our guest hops on. There was a report, cowbell again. There was a report. This was front page, right? When I woke up this morning, I looked at the CNN homepage. They had at the top about the state of emergency and National Guard coming in and Governor Nixon, blah, blah, blah. They had all that. But the top story was it's Herb Ferguson. And it's not all black and white. That's the report by Moni Basu. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. Moni Basu. It's Herb Ferguson. And it's not all black and white. Now, this is some racist suspect, white woman. And of course, she is married to a black male and they adopted a black child, a black son. I'm not going to read the full report, but just the chunk that stood out to me, it's kind of lengthy, so I'm definitely not reading the whole thing. But the portion that stood out, for this 45-year-old white woman, things were far more complex than they appeared in the news. The world that she, like many others, saw as black and white had morphed into myriad shades of gray over the years. She has been married to Ken, who is black, for almost 2 decades. She adopted Christopher, a black child, from a foster home. In 8 years, he will turn 18, Brown's age at the time of his death, and embark on life in a world she knows is still full of hate. She raised him in a biracial home and tried to make race a non-issue. That's a major act of racism right there. She wanted Christopher to grow up colorblind, even though America wasn't. But after Brown's death, she couldn't shield him from race or anger anymore. Ferguson changed overnight into what she describes as a poster child for the nation's racial woes. I do not, this is all in quotes, I do understand racial profiling exists, she says, explaining that she is not opposed to people demanding justice. No one here has a problem with peaceful protesters, but nothing good comes from violence. She drives me along South Florissant Road, Ferguson's main street, where there has been a recent push to revive downtown businesses. She takes me to a lake at nearby January Wabash Park, where her son goes fishing, though he rarely catches anything. She laughs. And to a new community center that she helped open. She stops her car in the vast parking lot of Schnucks Grocery Store, where one day in August, the Missouri National Guard amassed their armored vehicles. Mommy inquires Christopher, they had tanks. Why? Christopher is too young to grasp the magnitude of what has become known as Ferguson, but he thinks it's okay for people to be angry. He doesn't like that bad things are happening here. He heard a protester threaten his dad and hurl profanities at his mom. We make our way to the Quick Trip gas station that became ground zero on the first night of violent protesting. This is the QT that was burned, Wheat says. For no reason, says Christopher, finishing his mother's thoughts. Wheat understands that Ferguson is a tale of two cities. Her adopted hometown is made up of parks and gardens and historical homes. It's a place where families are trying to come together to build a community that benefits everyone. She understands, too, that there are parts of the city in which another tale is unfolding of impoverished young people who see no way out of their frustrations. She wishes more black families would get involved in the community by volunteering or simply turning out to vote. She blames poor civic engagement by African Americans for the gulf between the races. I just want to read that one more time for emphasis. She blames poor civic engagement by African Americans for the gulf between the races. She believes that Ferguson's black youth are being co-opted by outsiders into inciting violence. That no good Al Sharpton, that's not in the report, but I've heard that frequently with these co-opting outside Negroes. We live here, she says. This is our home. We have to live here long after everyone is gone. She is referring to the media and what she believes are mainly outsiders who have descended on Ferguson to protest and add chaos. No good Al Sharpton. Ken and I have never felt out of place here, she says. We've never felt we couldn't cross the tracks, but now there's a forced separation of the races. It's sad. This again was front page. I think it's still front page. It was the top story. Like when you go to CNN and they have an image, this was the first story that you would see. And I think now they bumped it down a little bit, but, in my opinion, massive act of racism, white supremacy with, I mean, just it's so many things to touch on. The tragic arrangements. She's speaking for black people. This is black people's fault because you lazy, shiftless Negroes, won't vote. And be involved, volunteer your time and what have you, separation of the, just malarkey through and through and through. I cannot wait. Josephine Baker, they have a great piece on Josephine Baker and the white terrorism. They call it race riots, but it's white terrorism in St. Louis, the early 20th century. I cannot wait to go back and check out that report. I'm a little bit surprised that I haven't seen as many people. I've heard a lot of people reference Dred Scott for what happened in the 19th century, but I have not seen as many people reference and talking about all of this Josephine Baker and the fact that she was terrified. She had PTSD around the race riots that happened while she was a young child in St. Louis during the early 20th century. Anywho, I will stop there. We have about 6 minutes before our guest hops in. She's not staying for the whole program, which is regrettable because they're. I had a lot of questions based on what I saw about her film. So if folks have questions, don't lollygag. But if the folks on the line have something they want to get in before we roll, just be brief because we got about 5 minutes. Everybody who dialed in with a line, with a hand, your line should be open. So that's 4693-M1 and our caller in Alabama.
Yes, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the lady that had the big time, kind of
hard to hear you. It's like there's some background noise.
Hello?
It's kind of difficult to hear you. It's like there's some howling in the background or something. I'm not sure. I don't know if that's coming from your line or not. Let's see. Okay, let's try it again.
Yeah. But yes, like that lady over there, she just had that old fashioned racism. You know, kind of remind me of when they say that all the time too. It's like for some reason in white people's mind, we belong to them. I guess it might be true by the looks of it, in fact. But I guess we belong to them, and so. You know, they look at it like that. They be like outsiders. Like, you know, these outsiders come messing with our Negroes. You know, our Negroes had it good before that SCLC and that Dr. Martin Luther King came in and all that. You see what I'm saying? It's like she had that type of mindset. You know what I'm saying? And just and she trying to confuse her son as well. You know, the simple fact that she wanted her son to be colorblind, you know, that's just outright confusion, you know. Why not let him know his history and know what happened, you know what I'm saying, instead of trying to, you know, instead of trying to confuse him. But I mute my line and let other people get in.
Appreciate that. Let's see. We got 4 minutes, so everybody can get 60 seconds. I guess you get in.
Okay. Thanks, Al. You go ahead, sir.
Can you hear anything in the background?
I can hear you okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a lot to say about the woman who said that she raised that child to be in a colorblind society. I think that she's actively trying to confuse her child about racism because Jane Elliott, she was on the Oprah show in the early 90s, and she stated that whenever white people say things like colorblind or they don't see color, what they are really trying to say is that they are trying to ignore the fact that you are there. They are trying to ignore the fact that people of color are there. So that's the reason why they say that I don't see color or we're in a colorblind society. I don't believe that most white people are confused about racism. I think that they are very knowledgeable about the system, because like you said before, in order for such system to exist, there has to be cooperation from the whole race. And I think that this is something that is picked up by osmosis from childhood.
Okay.
I think
sorry about that, sir. We're going to have to leave it right there because we got our guest is coming. I'm trying to make sure everybody gets a little bit of time. We should have time later if you y'all just hang out. You can share your thoughts down the road. M1, you want to get your 60 seconds?
Okay. Just want to make this quick. There's another diversionary tactic regarding Ferguson. There's been talk about the arrest of a law enforcement officer for sexually assaulting a pregnant woman. Now, one, it's interesting that this law enforcement officer is a correction officer, a black correction officer named Jairus Harvey, I believe his name is. And what this is doing is trying to say, hey, look, we are cleaning up on corruption on law enforcement. Look, we just arrested this law enforcement officer for, of all things, raping a pregnant woman. How low can you be? Meanwhile, at the same time, we're going to probably see the inevitable of Dan Wilson not being charged with a crime.
That's
so essentially two birds are being killed with one stone.
Right on. Lashes, did you want to get your 60 seconds in?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, just want to co-sign with Alabama saying that I do support the fact that they do view us as our niggers. So I'm in line with Alabama. Toe to toe.
Oh, great. That was right. Be right on. I forgot to put that. I told people, if you listen to the program on a regular basis, when there are news clips or allegations that racism has been practiced and that somebody has been called a nigger or what have you, if they beep it, I try and put it back in. I make an effort to put it back in because I think that's important. I think we have too many conversations where things get diluted, and that's not what we need to solve this problem. I think we need accurate, honest information in order to solve this problem. That being said, we'll see if we have our guest with us on the line so we can get ready to roll. As I said, the other folks, you all can hang out, and we should have time if you all have other questions, comments that you want to get in about our guest or any of the other things that we touched on. Just checking, is this Ms. Schwartz or is this one of our listeners? Double checking. Do we have Lacey Schwartz on the line, or is this just one of our listeners? Okay, I'll assume it's one of our listeners. Well, you had a hand up since we're waiting for her to dial in. The caller at 4300, did you have something quick you wanted to get in, like 60 seconds or less?
Nope.
Oh, okay. You had your hand up. I was just checking. Thank you for listening in, though. Appreciate that. Okie doke. We will hope our guest, Ms. Schwartz, is with us. I'll try to give folks the setup so that we can cover as much material as possible. If this was a recommendation from a listener, you will have to forgive because I simply do not remember the person that recommended her coming on the program. I will say that for folks who recall Dave Myers, he was a guest on the program in 2013, summer of 2013. He actually called when Dr. Eddie Moore Jr. was a guest on the program in 2009. I think he called some other times as well, and then we had him as a guest then. But he, very similar report, where he grew up white household here in Washington State, no less, and his white parents told him that he was white, but he had a skin condition. And if you have seen the images of our guest, Lacey Schwartz, Dave Myers is a lot darker than her. Like Dave Myers, if I had to pick somebody similar skin complexion, he is about the same skin complexion as he's darker than President Obama. I'm struggling to think of somebody that's famous enough that everybody would recognize. I just have to go with that for right now. He's darker than President Obama. At any rate, he didn't find out the truth of the matter that his mom got pregnant by a black male. She also, I think she cheated on her white partner at the time, got pregnant and just, you know, went ahead with this fabrication for years and years and years. It's a fascinating story. And it seems that there are quite a few of these that have come out that we know of, which is not surprising to me. But our guest for this evening, she did a film about her experience growing up in the Woodstock, New York area in a white Jewish family. And being told that she was white. And then until she got to college, she went to Georgetown. She did graduate studies at Harvard Law School, but at Georgetown, I think she said that, I guess Georgetown, when she was submitting her application, that they got a photo of her and she was accepted as a black person. She said in interviews that I've seen that she did not fill out, she didn't check a box for race when she was filling out her application for Georgetown, but they saw a picture of her and accepted her as a black person. And then some of the kind of black student groups that are on campus that they sent her information and were kind of welcoming her to be a member of their, you know, Black Student Union or whatever they have at Georgetown. And then she went back and confronted her mom about, you know, what is the deal? What's the truth? You know, why is my skin? Why is it that I have more melanin content than everybody else in our family? And then her mom went ahead and spilled the beans that she had had an extramarital affair with a black male, got pregnant, and just, you know, told her this untruth that her white father, the person that she thought was her white father, biological father, was not, in fact, her biological father. The film is called Little White Lie, and you can go online if you want to get more information. It's Little White Lie, the film.com. Again, it's Little White Lie, the film.com, and you can see different reviews, different screenings. You can even check out, they have a listing where they're going to be doing screenings of the film coming up. It's scheduled to be on PBS sometime in 2015. So if you can't catch it in an area when it comes to your neck of the woods, just look out for PBS and it should be on air sometime soon. Should be a hoot to have her on the program. We will check again. I think we should have her with us. Miss Lacey Schwartz, are you with us?
Hi, how are you?
We are doing grand. Thank you for sharing a bit of your time with us this evening. Again, folks can check the website. It is littlewhitelie.thefilm.com. Anything you think folks should know about you and the work that you do before we get started?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I was just listening in for the last few minutes and feel like I've come in the middle, so maybe you can update me and let me know what would be helpful. I just heard you sharing, you know, that we are having our limited theatrical release starting this week, which is great, and really, you know, excited for people to see the film and continue the conversations around it.
Right on. It should be on PBS again sometime in 2015, so you can look out for it there as well. I guess just to make sure we got the story correct, you grew up Woodstock, New York, white parents, mm-hmm. white mom, white father, white siblings. We're told that you also were a white person, white Jewish person. You had noticeably darker skin tone than your other family members, but that was, you know, hey, you're a white person. You have swarthy Sicilian grandparents. That's the reason why your skin is a little darker. And what was the point where that narrative started to fall apart?
You know, that's a really interesting question, exactly when it started to fall apart. I mean, it was definitely a process, you know, and I think that when you ask when did it fall apart, it's kind of like from whose perspective. One of the themes that I'm really looking at with this film is the kind of the power of denial and realizing that more so, I think, than people sometimes are just lying to other people, that they lie to themselves first. So I think that different people in my family, including myself, kind of had the story fall apart for them at different points. And that's one of the things that I really looked at in making this film, is trying to somewhat subtly, but, you know, kind of lay out what those different points were. So for me in particular, and as I said, I really think that that is a different timeline for different people in my family. But for me, that timeline was right around, you know, I had from a pretty young age been questioned about being different, why I looked the way I did, but was also given reasons to justify it. And I would say that once, you know, I was kind of very much a product of my environment and was, for all intents and purposes, somewhat happy to embrace that. I think I grew up in, you know, I grew up in a loving, supportive family, which I am to this day thankful for, but it wasn't something that, you know, I wanted to question, really. I grew up in this bubble where it was really helpful to be a part of something specific. And so the biggest thing that happens, and this is something that, you know, show in the film, is that when my parents split up, it was really kind of this breaking point for me where I started questioning things around me on a deeper level.
Did your parents divorce, was the fact that your mom had this extramarital affair with a black male that resulted in your pregnancy, did that contribute to the divorce, or was that not related?
I don't know if it was kind of explicitly connected to it, but I personally think that it has some connection to it.
Did your, if you know, did your white father, did he know about this affair, you know, before you did? Or was this something that he kind of found out later on down the road, just like you?
You know, I think he found out about it later on down the road. To the degree did he know, and again, this is covered in the film, but did he know anything about the affair from earlier on? Yes, but did he realize that, you know, that I was not his biological child? Not for many years.
Fascinating, fascinating. In the New York Times report that covers this film, you state that you know what it's like to be a black person. You know what it's like to be a white person. Based mm-hmm. on those first 18 years, what is your understanding of what it means to be a white person?
That's an interesting question. What does it mean to be a white person? You know, I think what it means, obviously, these things are kind of social constructs, and they're constructs around who, you know, how other people identify you and who you're connected to. So I think for me, what it meant to be a white person was to be a part of a white family, to be a part of a white community, white society, and to really have that mind frame, which, you know, somewhat ironically, although I don't think it's much of a secret, is that, you know, having that kind of mindset, like looking at myself as white, is also sometimes looking at myself as like the absence of color. Right, I don't think that people who are white, they don't always kind of openly, they're not as conscious of their whiteness. You know, it's sometimes the other or the minority that is more conscious of how they identify and how they situate themselves. It's kind of this majority-minority standpoint and experience. So for me, it was really about, you know, not necessarily, you know, what it meant to be white in large part was the association I had to various people, in particular my family, and also it was about, you know, really not thinking about race to any large degree.
Okay. And you, touch on that in the film. Based on either growing up or as things have evolved when doing this film, do you have a definition for the term racism? What is your understanding of what that term means, racism?
I don't know if I have a definition per se about what racism is, but I can just say my understanding of it, you know, is, it's interesting. I mean, to a certain degree, I could come up with something, but in certain ways, I'm not sure, because I think that there's a lot of stuff that some stuff is, just, when I think of racism, I think of things that are blatant, that it's conscious. I don't necessarily think of it as when people are kind of ignorant about their actions or how they can be racialized and how it can be harmful to other people. It doesn't mean that I don't think that those things are real issues, but I don't know if I would call it racist per se.
That is fascinating. When you say, I guess let me back up and ask this. Do you think it's possible for non-white people to practice racism against white people?
Whoa. The question was, do I think it is possible for non-white people to be racist? You know, it's interesting.
Against white people, really, to practice racism against white people.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a question I would have to really think about a little bit more. I mean, I'd have to really think about it. I'm hesitant to give a firm answer on that, but I mean, so what's the definition of racist? Going back to that question, in thinking about this question, is like when somebody discriminates against somebody on the basis of their race, right? I mean, to a certain degree. So if you're using that definition, can somebody discriminate against a white person based on their race? I mean, do I think it's possible? I think it's possible. It's just, it's not something that I really think happens that often, I'll say that.
Right on. You talk about kind of in the film some of the interesting things, moments where your status as a member of the white race was questioned or challenged, maybe even rejected. The quote in the New York Times, it reads, over the years, Ms. Schwartz said strangers had challenged her whiteness. At her bar mitzvah, a synagogue member told her that it was nice to have an Ethiopian Jew in their midst. Can you think of some other times when white people, just based on your phenotypical presentation, looked at you and said, hey, I have some, I don't know if you're a white person. Like, can you give us some of the other incidents?
It's interesting. I mean, I think that that example is written correctly, but then the way I think you're, in a sense, you're interpreting it is that's not a situation where somebody's actually challenging, like, in the way you're interpreting it. I don't think that they're challenging my whiteness. Like, they're not saying, you know, that example challenges my whiteness because they're assuming that I'm something else, as opposed to, like, kind of blatantly, really just openly challenging it in the way you just phrased it. You know, somebody saying, like, I don't really think that you're white. And honestly, those kind of situations where people said things like that came more so from people of color in my experience than it came from white people. So it might be people that assumed I was something else and kind of questioned, what are you? But they weren't necessarily coming up to me and saying, you claim to be white and you're not. That actually came more from people of color.
Was it a white person?
Specifically black people.
Was it a white person that made that remark at your bar mitzvah?
It was, but okay. What I'm trying to say is that they're not saying in that situation, I mean, just to be crystal clear about it, they're not coming up to me and saying, you're claiming to be white and you're not. They're actually, that person in that situation was saying, just making an assumption that I was not white. So like the way the New York Times wrote it, I think is correct, but then the way you're then rephrasing it in a sense, saying, like, are there other examples of people who have come up to me and said, we don't actually, like, you claim to be white, but you don't think, we don't think you're white. That did not happen with other white people.
Okay.
It was more that they assumed I was not white, and that challenged my whiteness.
Okay. It might be splitting hairs, but my interpretation, I think most people, the association that they have with the skin complexion of somebody who would be classified as Ethiopian is not a white person. We're talking about a country on the continent of Africa. Generally, I think if someone
What I'm saying is, I guess I interpreted your question to say that people were actually challenging it in the sense that they were saying, you claim that you're white, but we don't accept you as white. Like a white person saying that to me. I didn't have that situation.
Okay. I guess I would say that even if they're not stating it as explicitly that, it's been my experience that I think white people frequently will make statements, whether it's presented as a joke or whether it's being more veiled, being more sarcastic, where they are saying something that suggests that they either have questions or out and out not accepting you as a white person. And to me, that sort of statement that you're an Ethiopian Jew, to me, strongly suggests that whoever the white person was, they do not think of you as a white person. I could be wrong.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. No, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Definitely. And that's why I think that, like, the New York Times stated it as such as well.
Okay. Right on.
Completely.
Right
on. Yeah.
Did you have experiences growing up, either before or after, either way, when you were growing up thinking that you're a white person or after you got accurate information, did you have experiences where black people were rejecting you or being mean to you either way?
I don't know if I would say that they rejected me. I mean, they certainly questioned me. And I think, you know, as I kind of talk about, and I talk about this in the film, that I think, you know, rightfully so, in a sense that they were perplexed and questioned me, definitely questioned me. I don't know if I experienced, like, direct anger, but I certainly, it seemed a little like I was offending them to a certain degree. In particular, like, this was really happened in high school, because I grew up in a town up until when I went to high school that was very much a bubble where really there just were not that many people of color at all. And then I went to a high school that was kind of, because of districting, in the town next to us. And it was much more diverse. So that was really kind of the first experience where I was encountering more of that and got a lot of questions there.
Okay, that's it. If they're, were they asking questions, or was it asking questions in a mean, kind of callous sort of sense, or was it just questions because they were curious based on your presentation, looking at you and just trying to get an understanding of who you are?
I would say it was somewhat in between. Okay. I don't know if I would say it was mean and callous, but I don't think it was just, curious.
Okay.
I think they were making a point.
Got it. What point were they trying to make, do you think?
I think that they were saying that they didn't buy that I was white.
Oh, okay. Got it.
But I don't know if it was like mean or callous per se.
Okay. Did you have any problems in terms of white students or any other white folks that you were around growing up who were practicing racism against you?
I didn't. I grew up in a town where, and I think it's a bit of an interesting part of the conversation, because I don't think that, like, the conversation on race is all about racism. I think that there's a lot going on around race. And it's interesting because sometimes, when sometimes race is easiest to talk about when we have these, like, blatant examples of racism. And it's harder to talk about when we don't. But it doesn't mean that it still doesn't need to be talked about. And so I grew up in a space that was like very, like kind of a very liberal town, and a very white town where people were not, like, I definitely would not categorize, I'm overgeneralizing because I'm sure, every town has their outliers, but in general, it wasn't like a racist environment. But it nonetheless was an environment where we didn't talk about race, and we really didn't talk about difference on that level. And I think that should be other than that. I mean, I think we should talk about it. And I think that we're, kind of doing, especially in that kind of liberal space, I think that it would be amazing to be having those conversations about race there.
And just read a report. There's a white woman. She's married to a black male. She lives in Ferguson. They adopted a black child. She is also from Woodstock. And she said she raised her child to be her black adopted child to be colorblind, which I thought was fascinating. In Ferguson, no less. This act by your mom, where she's telling you something that is not true, that you are a white person and, not giving you all this information that she had this affair with a black person and got pregnant and the whole nine. Do you consider that an act of racism on the part of your mom?
I don't.
How come?
How come? Because I don't think that, very loosely defined it before. Like, I don't think she was discriminating against anyone in particular, me, on the basis of race. The reason she wasn't, my mother was married for 20-something years. Like, the reason she didn't reveal that my father was somebody other than my father was not because of his race.
What would your response be? Someone said your mom's behavior in terms of a white woman having this covert extramarital sexual liaison with a black male, that this fits a very long narrative with regards to racism worldwide, where white women have snuck off. They're not supposed to be having sexual intercourse with black males anyway. That's huge taboo all the way around. Emmett Till, whole towns have been burned down around this, that there is a long legacy of white women having these sort of secret sexual affairs with black males, and then when they are about to be found out, either saying that it's rape or denying it or lying, that this is kind of a long legacy where there's a lot of scholarship on this. What would your response to that be?
Well, I think some of what you're talking about, just because those things have occurred and are true, doesn't mean that that's connected to every person who has an affair with a black man. And in particular, especially around those, the kind of issues you're talking about with, the rape and the negativity of, I think some of the examples that you're just now alluding to are really about, then kind of putting that blame on, the man. Like, the example of the rape is a perfect example. Like, that's not the situation that happened in my family. The denial of the relationship and the denial of the connection, I don't think is about, therefore, like, the exactly the racism you're talking about is about actually then placing blame. And that's kind of really where a lot of that comes from, and I don't think that that is relevant in this situation. And as I said, like, I really do think that, you know, in certain ways, by kind of overgeneralizing and going to the extremes of making certain connections, it erases the conversations that we have to have in more nuanced ways about race, that everything is not always so just strongly negative or racist, but it doesn't mean that it isn't, you know, creating a problem within society around race. And I think some of these spaces that aren't necessarily kind of having this, you know, again, fully have racist environments in them, that there still is work to be done around race. And when we bring the conversation to the level of, you know, bringing it just about racism, and don't get me wrong, like, I definitely think racism exists in society and is a huge problem. But I don't think that that's always the situation. Like, I think sometimes one of the problems is just this lack of race consciousness. And having a conversation about that is also really important to move things forward and to actually hopefully help us have progress in terms of, like, racial divides and racial issues in particular in this country. So I think that it's not always about turning the conversation into one about racism, but there's other race issues that are also important to talk about.
Hmm. That's, well, I guess I would say, number one, I don't have the same definition of racism that you have, so I have a very different analysis of this problem and these different events that happen. I don't use the term racial consciousness or racial divide. I just have a very different understanding of what it means to be white, a very different definition and concept of racism. And I could be wrong, but just to make sure that that is clear in terms of why I have a different view on this, even if I move that to the side in terms of there's a long history, and we've had white scholars who've written about this in terms of white women practicing racism by doing that very thing, having these covert liaisons with black males or even black females and lying about it or whatever else, and how that is an act of racism, in my opinion. Even if I go to Dave Myers, his example, where there was no rape, there was no crime per se, but his white mom basically did the same thing as your white mom, where she had an affair with a black male, got pregnant, lied to the child about it, covered this up for years, and even when it came out, she still continued to lie and deny about the issue and just would not talk about it. And I told him I thought that was a major act of racism. In your case, it's not only not giving you accurate information, but you not having access to your biological black father. I would say that that's two non-white people minimum who are being mistreated in this incident. And I would just flat my general rule, anytime a white person is lying to a non-white person, even if it's just one non-white person, that off the bat, you do not get benefit of the doubt. That is an act of racism, because that's one of the main ways that white people practice racism, not giving accurate information to non-white people. I would say that more than rape or arrests or what we're seeing play out in Ferguson, that more than anything else is the primary way that white people continue to practice racism 2014 in giving inaccurate information to non-white people. That happens all the time. Even seeing that play out in Ferguson to some degree, not giving accurate information about what's happening. So if we just have a difference of opinion, that's fine. I would remind listeners, though, I would definitely say that just since we are talking about your mom, that you definitely are going to have a different aspect in terms of talking about whether or not your white mom was practicing racism against you or the black male that she fathered a child with. Do you think that's accurate?
I'm sorry. Well, I don't understand the question. I'm difference of opinion of what?
Because we're talking about your mom, that certainly makes it very different. If we're talking about white people in an abstract sense, or if we were talking about just a random white person that you know, we're talking about your white mom. That's certainly going to change how you interpret, talk about these events. Do you think that's accurate?
Sure, but I think that, I mean, listen, I've spent a lot of time making a film, and I've made this film not just because of my, you know, my family issues. I mean, really, I look at this film as being about, you know, the power of family secrets in people's lives and the power of denial. And it's really, for me, it's not about, and, I mean, you haven't seen the film, right?
No, ma'am.
Yeah. So the film is not about, you know, kind of talking about these things just to kind of talk about it and vent about it. It really is about the power of having these conversations and moving past things, about, like, really not being a victim and how do you learn. I mean, I see that a lot of people carry a lot with them till the day they die. And in the end, really, the people, I believe, that really hurts is the people who carry that. And so for me, the really kind of the motivation of making this film is how do I have the conversations that I need to have, figure out what the truth is, and then figure out how to accept it and move forward. And, you know, many people maybe would have not had to continue to have a relationship with their family or various other people. But for me, I felt like I, you know, came from, I think I'm probably more empathetic to most people than most people in terms of really thinking that people make mistakes and people are really not always conscious of the consequences of their actions. It doesn't necessarily excuse it, but I don't also at the same time feel like it's really about the family element to it, you know, and how these family elements are kind of magnified throughout society. So, I mean, that's really about, like, kind of the power of those conversations and how they can actually be positive changes in people's lives. So some of the things that you're asking about, because it's my mother, no, I do not think that. But if it was somebody else's mother looking in from the outside, I kind of know how I view the world. I wouldn't think that either. It is not, you know, as you made it clear, that's the way you look at things. But, yeah, it's not the way I look at things. And it's also not the way kind of I live my life or feel like, you know, kind of the way I'm trying to go about processing information. I also just want to say that, unfortunately, as we discussed, I only have a few more minutes, so I want to make sure that, you know, if there's anything else you want to ask, please feel free.
All right, absolutely. If any of the folks that dialed in, I wanted to make sure I gave them an opportunity to ask a question. If folks had anything quick that they wanted to get in, I would say before you exit, I definitely encourage our listeners on a regular basis to reject that cliche about having a conversation about racism. I hear people talk about racism all the time, and I have been for years. That's not a new thing. I think people talk about racism all the time. What I state is that what we need is accurate, honest conversation about racism. That is what's needed more than anything, and that's what I see. That's where I see the lack being in terms of people being able to speak honestly about racism. Did anybody that's listening in, did anyone have a
question? Oh, wait,
question?
Sorry, just to clarify something. I wasn't saying the honest conversations about racism. I was talking about family secrets and just actually, I mean, really the film is not just about race, so it really goes beyond that.
Right. You said that a couple times. That did come up in terms of you said having that conversation and then getting beyond it. And that's just something I'm trying to state more regularly now because I hear that, in my opinion, it's a cliche. People say that all the time. We need to have this conversation. And people have been talking about racism for a long time. That's not the issue, in my opinion. Lashes, I think she has seen your film. She had praise. She said she thought it was constructed. Did you have a question for Ms. Schwartz?
Hi. Yes. Good evening to the guests. I really enjoyed your film. By the way, I thought it was fantastic, especially the editing portion of the film was great too. And I want you to know, when you were your time at university, did other like white people view you as white as well before you being fully accepted by the black community during your time at university?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I mean, it was a brief time when I was at university, you know, where I was kind of in that space. And honestly, I didn't really have those conversations. I was really in a place by the time I got to university, and it's, you know, hard to talk about this for people who haven't seen the film, but first of all, I really appreciate your comments. And it was a space where I think I was no longer really identifying as being white, and so I wasn't having those conversations with other people who are white, or kind of, you know, I wasn't identifying as such, so I don't think other people were kind of putting me into that box. It was a really interesting period where I was kind of, I was in my head more than I was talking about it out loud, outside of the kind of this black exploration that I was doing.
I didn't mean like necessarily like discussions with other white people around that time,
yeah.
But more like you could just be walking around campus, and did other, just by your treatment by white people, did they treat you as if you were white, or did they treat you as if not white?
Yeah, it's really hard to say. I mean, it's interesting because I went to Georgetown, which was also a Catholic university, and I'm Jewish. And so I definitely felt like in that space I was conscious of people almost being surprised about meeting somebody who was Jewish. There weren't that many Jews at Georgetown when I went to school there. So I was definitely aware of that kind of otherness as well. It was interesting. It was a period of time, actually, and this is something I don't talk about as much as film. I was really, like, kind of going in and out of different worlds and a little bit confused about where I fit into a lot of them. And also Georgetown, I'm not sure if you're experienced with it. It has a lot of these different groups. It's quite international, so it has a lot of different groups, and it just felt like I was kind of going in and out of different worlds. And I wasn't really sure that anybody was particularly claiming me in that first year there.
Okay, my last comment, question-ish, is that, like, when I was watching the doc, one thing I walked away with was how, like, within your own community in Woodstock, how everyone who is classified as white were pretty much willing to absorb you as white, as part of, like, the white collective, which stood out to me, stating that the meaning of white or the definition of white is not fixed. For example, would be like how the Irish became white, how the Italians became white, how the Polish, and how the Jewish, you know, Jewish faith people became white. So I just thought that was really interesting, like in your particular case, within the documentary, how your town was willing to accept you as white, but white people clearly make a distinction on if you're not white, there is a fixed definition, but if you are part of the white collective, the meaning of white is interchangeable throughout years to come when it's beneficial, so to speak, for due to the power structure. So I thought that was very, very, that was a good point in your documentary that was pretty much highlighted.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, thank you.
Great. Did you have time for a last listener call, question from a listener? Or?
Sure, no problem.
Great. Caller from a block number. Did you have a question for Miss Lacey Schwartz? Your line should be open.
Yes. Thank you for accepting my call. Thank you, Gus and Justice, for the program today. Good evening to everyone here today. This is our university to learn how racism, white supremacy operates. I am still learning. Thank you to your guest, Lacey Schwartz, for being here. Miss Schwartz, what is your ethnicity?
What is my ethnicity?
Yes.
I mean, I identify, I don't know, ethnicity. I identify as being black, biracial, half white and half black. I don't know if I'd say it's my ethnicity, though. But why don't you say more?
Do you believe you were conceived from two people who were in love?
Do I think I was conceived by two people who were in love? No.
Okay, what is your ethnicity on your birth certificate?
You know, I honestly haven't looked at it recently, so I can't answer that question. I don't know the answer.
Do you believe...
I don't know if there is one on my birth certificate, to be honest.
Okay. Do you believe your mom and dad are suspect to be racist, white supremacists?
I don't, no.
Thank you. No further questions.
Outstanding. The film, you can go to the website, littlewhitelie.com. As I said, they have links where you can see where they're going to have screenings at. Check it out. See if it's going to be in your neck of the woods. At minimum, you can check out for PBS in 2015. It should be broadcasting at some point. I'm sure they'll have some advertisements and what have you to let folks know when it's going to be airing. Ms. Schwartz, thank you very much for being with us on the program. It was grand to hear from you.
Great. Thank you.
For sure. Enjoy
Thanks
the rest
for
of your
me.
Evening. For sure. For sure.
You as well.
Right on. Context of white supremacy. We'll have a quick commercial break and be right back. Folks who did not get to get a question in, she was not going to be with us for the full program, so missed out, but we'll see if you have any comments when we get back. Context of white supremacy.
RacismDaily.com, your number one source for global news reports on race, racism, and overt actions of white supremacy. From Asia to the Americas to Europe to Australia to Africa, racism is not a thing of the past. It is our current reality. Be informed. Be globally informed. You should be the first to know. RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com, RacismDaily.com.
Is racism hurting you? On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Do you need a one-stop shop for all of your multimedia needs? Triumphant Multimedia is a skilled team of professionals with a passion for great marketing and chic design. Our specialties include consulting, brand development, copywriting, and creative graphic design. That's second to none. We also offer photography, photo retouching, videography, and video editing. At Triumphant Multimedia, our goal is to provide highly effective creative solutions built to suit any individual need or budget. Give us a call at 678-732-8067 or check us out online at TRIMultimedia.com.
Hi everyone, welcome. This is Justice with the Cows Radio program. If you want to learn about, understand, and counter racism, white supremacy, be sure not to miss a Cows episode. We keep them jammed, packed with constructive information to sharpen your use of words to help eliminate the system of racism, white supremacy, ASAP. Also, to be able to invest in my counter-racist efforts, co-hosting the Cows Radio program, please visit my blog, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com.
You're just saying just buckets and buckets of work.
I got an uncle real crazy. My Uncle B, 55 years old, hates white people, married to a white lady. And he's sitting around going, "Oh, these crackers ain't shit, except for Susan." And he tried to explain the whole thing to me one day, say, yeah, I got a white wife, I love her, she love me, that's all that matter. But I tell you this, if the revolution ever come, I'll kill her first. Just to show these crackers I mean business. Motherfucker cracker ass, motherfucker cracker. Shit cracker motherfucker. What? Hey, hi, honey. Motherfucker cracker, I'll kill my cracker kids too.
50 cows. We are fundraising, hopefully. Folks will invest if they have gotten any constructive information from the cows to help us continue to broadcast. You can visit the blog racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. The PayPal is in the top right corner. You should see the button. For the folks who are not feeling PayPal, drop me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, and we can hook you up with a physical mailing address if you are more comfortable supporting that way. But we are continuing our fundraising efforts. Thank you kindly to all the folks who have been so generous over the years and invested and helped keep us on the air. I hope the program has been and continues to be worthy of your time and energy. I will nab again, Miss Schwartz. She said she was not able to remain for the full program, so that's why she was only with us for a short stint. I know some of the folks who dialed in, we were not able to get your questions. But if you want to just state your question so that way it's out there, people can think about it. Or if you have comments, feel free to chime in. I have not seen this film. I was glad we were able to get Lash's question on the line because I know she has seen the film, and I know she does her own film work. I'm certain she will have some spectacular works coming down the line for us to go and check out that'll be constructive. But I had just told her within the last week or so that her film tastes are highly suspect, in my opinion. All in jest. But I did say that within the last week, and this might be Exhibit B for her film taste being suspect. All I can say is I haven't seen this film, but just based on what you heard in this interview and the research that I did, right, to prepare for the program, like reading articles and seeing some of the interviews that she's done. I said she was on Chris Hayes. You can check that and see what she had to say there, and some of the Q&A sessions that she did for the film that got recorded. All I can say is that if the film is constructive, and the trailers are online, so you can check that out too to kind of get a snippet. But if the film is constructive, and it might be, you know, I'm ignorant, so, you know, whatever, Gus might be talking crazy. If it is constructive, it would definitely have to be in the category of a film that is constructive if you are already less confused about racism. I mean, I just cannot imagine any way possible where this could be a film where you could go into it already being confused about racism and come out with constructive, accurate information about what racism is, how it works, what it means to be a white person. And I would just say you can rewind and listen to the conversation we had the last 40 minutes. Two quick points that I wanted to get in because I thought they were key and related to what I just said. Number one would be that is so standard when you ask a question about white people mistreating you, practicing racism, and somehow it gets to, I haven't really had a problem with these white people. These no good Negroes, man. And it's global. You can go back in the archives. We've had guests from all over the world where that happens in short order, where, nope, I haven't really had that much of a problem with white people, but it's been more black people. And I'm not even saying that it's not true. Well, I am saying that it's not. We're in a system of racism, white supremacy. It's just that is not possible for it to be that white people have just been grand and I haven't had a problem. That just cannot be the case. I'm sure there are exceptions where there are some non-white people who just haven't had that many bad experiences with white people directly. Not that they're not victims of racism, but they just haven't had acute incidents where an individual white person has mistreated them, either blatantly calling them a nigger or some other racist slur. Or other forms of mistreatment. But it's just been my experience that frequently non-white people, we are around racists, white people, we're being mistreated and we do not classify it as mistreatment. And you can just go right back to that illustration with her mom lying and not giving accurate information about her pregnancy and birth and all that, and her not classifying it as an act of racism. And you can rewind Dave Myers when he was on the I forgot I should have tagged him. I cannot believe I slacked on my duties like that. We're Facebook friends and everything. He's right here. I had been thinking all day long. I got to make sure I tag him so he can listen to this program. So if he wants to call and ask a question or whatever the case may be, because this is, you know, this is his story. We talked about it last night. I cannot believe I failed to do. Anywho, he said the same thing where he was on the program and I sound clipped it when he was here in 2009. He called in And he said that his mom did what any normal person would do. And I just cracked up laughing when I played it as a sound clip. When he was a guest on the program, he had to laugh when he was, you know, listening to what he said from, I think this was 2000. So it was 4 years. 4 years had passed. And he hopefully got a better, more accurate understanding. But I mean, that is, woo. I mean, forget Darren Wilson. That is an astronomical act of white supremacy racism, in my opinion. For a white person to warn the sex act. I mean, that's just period. White person having sex with a non-white person, but then to get pregnant and lie about it to the child and all the, I mean, gosh, that is, anywho, I mean, you can come down wherever you want to on that, but that's just a huge act of racism. And that is very consistent. Not that I expected her. I mean, that's your mom. It's no way that you're going to be able to be, in my opinion, it's not way you're going to be able to be clear and unbiased and talking about a family member and someone that you have that deep and intimate of a connection to. I wouldn't expect that. And in fact, the Q&A session that I played, that segment where you heard her mom got a standing ovation. And that to me right there, if I watch this film and I'm not coming away thinking, man, her mom practiced racism in doing all this. If I somehow come away from this film and her mom is worthy of applause, that right there says a lot in terms of, for me, impugning how accurate this film is and the constructive value of the film. The cliche, we can just go to the definition of racism. I can stop right there. Definition of racism. At first, it didn't even seem like she had a clear definition of racism, which is also very standard. This is not an indictment. This is just something that's very important. And this is why I didn't start with the definition today, because a lot of times it can take up a lot of time. If you've listened to The Cows for a while, there have been segments where we spent 20 minutes just going over the definition of racism. And I don't mind that at all, because it's important. That right there dictates a lot about what's going to be said after we're done with that definition, in terms of how we evaluate and converse about this problem hinges on what is your definition of racism. And if you don't have a definition, or if your definition is not accurate, everything that follows is going to be a lot of nonsense, typically. And that's not an indictment. I could be incorrect. My definition could be in error. But the main point is to make sure that you have a definition and to make sure you get that out on the table. But I would say you could just go right there. Since I made some jokes with Lashes, what I would normally do is go to the folks who didn't get asked opportunity to ask questions. Of Lashes, if you want to respond, and or if you want to give folks some more details, since you did get to see the film, you said it was constructive. If you want to get a word in, then I'll get some of the folks who didn't get opportunity to chime in.
When you see this documentary, you will clearly see the behavior patterns that her mother was practicing and is still currently practicing racism, white supremacy. Also in the film, her mother blurted out, there's a kitchen scene where she's talking to the director, and the director is posing questions to her mom, like, you know, how long you kept this lie going, blah, 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 blah. And the mother comes out right and says, if it wasn't for the fact that Rodney, the director's biological father, was black, none of this would have been an issue. Like, none of it would have came out. So, in how she, her mother was rationalizing it in that scene was, if the person she was having an affair with was white, and it was indeed someone else's child, not her husband, who is her husband's child, this would never been an issue, because the child would have been white, we could have been all going on with our lives, this would have never came to the surface. The affair would have been under wraps, no one would have never known. But since the affair was with a black male, it became an issue. And also, when her daughter, the director, asked her mother in the doc, you know, like, what was it about you coming down here to somewhere, I think it was in Brooklyn, where she met her biological father? Like, what was it about you coming down here, wanting to continue to see Rodney? And the mother was like, you know, I like the fact that she could snap her fingers and have a black man come running.
Wow.
Yes, she specifically stated that. And the mother stated that she only had a sex thing with Rodney. It was only a sex thing. She states this at the playground scene. All this comes out at the playground scene, when the mother comes to the playground in Brooklyn and brings the director, her daughter, to hash out like how she met her father, what was going on at the time, et cetera, et cetera. This is on film, in the doc.
And what's also not mentioned in the in this trailer is that the mother brought the biological father, Rodney, around the family all the time. He would come over to, like, family get-togethers. He was eating at the table with the family. And, like, how, and when you see, the like, her biological father, what he looks like, I was like, there's no way in hell you cannot say this is not her father. She looks just like him. I was laughing my ass off from the beginning of the film to the very end of the film. But my God, this was such a great illustration of you know, racism, white supremacy at work. But clouded and coached under the term Jewish culture. It's fascinating. I thought it was absolutely fascinating. I'll mute my line right now. Well, you can go on to other guests who have questions.
Right on. As I said, it definitely sounds like one of those. It would be better if you are less confused, if you know what it is that you're looking at. But that does sound quite interesting. I think they are supposed to be doing a screening here. I don't know how they wouldn't. Seattle is, you know, liberal mecca, so they say. I would be a little surprised if they didn't. But if they do, I will definitely make an effort to get out and check it out. But if anything, what I just heard, that sounds like... all of the people who have asked questions, because I have gotten emails down through the years and people who have commented, who have said, you know, man, Gus, why do you keep focusing on these white women? Why do you keep saying that they're so treacherous? Why do you keep saying that they're so dangerous? And what's that? That what you just heard right there. Put that in. Exhibit A. I will say again, do not sleep on or with white women. They are astronomically dangerous, cunning, deceptive, lethal, all the way through. Everything that you just heard, particularly being able to snap your fingers and have a black person running, that right there. And I have no idea. Well, I can't even say that. That right there says it all to me. If she heard that and she didn't think anything was incorrect about that or racist or something suspect, that says a lot to me about the confusion. And I've said that again. Non-white people, when you have sexual intercourse with a white person and or if you are the product of those relationships, it's astronomical confusion. It should be very clear why that is the case, but the confusion is rife. Let's see. The people who didn't get a chance to ask a question, the caller, it says Felix, so that's just what I'm going with. Felix, did you have a comment or a question that you wanted to ask that you didn't get to?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I wanted to say, like, it seemed like I was listening to a white person. The words and, like, the formulation of them was more similar to a white person and not a black person who was more confused. I think she knew that there was, like, not too much time. I think she wasted a lot of time. Like, that's something, like, more typical of a white person. Some of the disagreements that you and her had were only like disagreements that you would more likely have with a white person in comparison to a more confused black person. Like I'm very, very suspicious of white people, but at minimum, I'm suspicious about her. And they're like, from her side, there seems to be a commitment and like persistence of confusing and sort of like keeping the CNBC or MSNBC status quo more so than like black guests that you had on the show. And that's all I wanted to say.
Fascinating. I think especially the exchange around her saying that she didn't think the white people were rejecting her white status. I thought that was fascinating as well, but I'll hush so that other folks who didn't get a chance to see the person, it looks like you're at a different person at a block number. I'm just trying to check to see the people who didn't get an opportunity to get a question in. The person who dialed in at a block mm-hmm. number with a hand up, did you get an opportunity to share yet?
I did get a chance. Okay.
Hang on one second, because I did get your question. Hang on one second. Any of the other folks that are on the line who did not get an opportunity to ask a question, did you all have anything that you wanted to get in? I'm trying to put in. Get.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, good evening to everyone. Actually,
I saw the film yesterday myself, and one of the things that was really interesting was when Lacey asked her mother about, okay, well, was it because Rodney, her biological father, was it because he was black? Is that why you didn't have a relationship with him? She said, no, it was because he wasn't financially fit, I guess. And so the reason why she continued on having the relationship with her Jewish husband that she was married to, another thing that was in detail, her mother got married to the man that Lacey grew up knowing as her father and met Rodney at the same time. So their relationship was actually, it concurrently started at the same time she got married to her husband. And she said it was because he didn't have any money. Yet in all, Rodney was sort of like a celebrity within his neighborhood. He recruited for basketball companies, and he also coached a couple of young budding stars at the time. And her mother worked at a park. Her mother's excuse was, you know, I was really young. I was like 21, and I was in charge of this park. She also made some kind of racist comments too. She was like, oh, you know, this place looks the same way. It looks like Lashes. I don't know if she would remember, but she said something along the lines of, yeah, it looks like black people live here. It looked this way when I first came here when I was 21, and it still looks the same way. So that was pretty interesting. Another thing too was that Lacey's father had claimed that her mother never told her, up to the time that they got divorced, that her mother never told her that she had an affair. So mom kept this lie going until whenever. So from what Lacey knows, her father, the father that she grew up knowing, he still hasn't heard from her mother that she had an affair with a black man, and Lacey is the product of a relationship with a black male. And so you can see how her father's attitude had changed toward her when she tried to open up about it. She actually was the one that told her father that she was the product of an tragic interracial sexual relationship or interracial relationship. But her father had called her at some point in time. He's like, I'm not ready to talk about it. And her father made this really strange comment, because when she went off to college, she started to get in touch with her quote-unquote blackness. And so she was like, you know, Dad, I guess I identify as black. He was like, well, you don't think I didn't see it? I see it from the choices of music that you listen to, the entertainment that, you know, that you spend your time being entertained by, the clothes that you wear, the way you wear your hair. And it was kind of like he sounded offended that she was choosing her blackness over her whiteness, whatever she grew up knowing as her whiteness. So it was pretty interesting, a lot of the undertones, the racial undertones that were, if you're a black person, it's pretty explicit, but, you know, it was pretty interesting, some of the things that the family was saying. One of the questions that I really did want to ask her was, how is her relationship with the father that she knew growing up as her father? And also, how does her family identify her now that the secret is out? Because they just thought, or as they claim, well, you know, white. That's how we've always seen you. We've always seen you as white. And one of her relatives was like, well, once he found out that she was black, he said it did change the relationship. He didn't really go into specifics, but it just changed the way how he saw her. So I'd be interested in knowing how, now that the secret is out, how do her relatives treat her, and how do they see her? And interestingly enough, she actually married a black guy, so...
And she has two boys, twins.
Oh, she has children. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And the children look black. You just know that about that.
I'm sure. It was a really interesting movie. It was very, very interesting. I hope more people get an opportunity to see it, because, I mean, after hearing the dialogue between the host and the guest, I just was thinking, this poor, confused child. And it reminded me of what Dr. Francis Kress-Rowling says, you know, when people play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. And really, she's extremely confused just from the movie, just from the film, and just from the discussion tonight. You can just hear that she's so confused. Like, I understand the need to think about and deliberate over questions, but she just, I'm not going to say that she wasn't prepared. It just seems like she was taken off guard with a lot of the questions, particularly anything that dealt with race and her mother and all these things. So it's really unfortunate, very unfortunate, but it's a really great movie. I would definitely recommend it to everyone that's listening.
The person, let me see, the person at, man, I'm having a tough time. The person at 4693, did you have comments you wanted to get in, feedback? Caller at 4693, are you there? I don't know if you pressed your mute button accidentally.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
I don't really know what the call is about. I called in earlier, and, you know, I lost signal. So I know it was with the non-white guest who had the Sicilian parents. Am I correct?
Oh, she had white parents. The Sicilian part came in. That was part of the lie that was told, that her white mom had an affair with a black male, and a pregnancy resulted. And so to explain why this child, our guest, Lacey Schwartz, why she had darker skin tone, she said that it was because her swarthy Sicilian grandparents, that they had darker skin and that she inherited it from them. That was the excuse. But both of her parents are classified as white. She said they're so-called Jewish white people.
Okay. I truly believe that the phrase Jewish is a term that is used to hide their whiteness. You know, like I said before, I do not believe that white people are confused about the system. I do believe that they are totally aware that the system exists. And, you know, I did hear a part where you mentioned that when she was at a bar mitzvah, they said it's good to have an Ethiopian Jewish person around.
Correct.
Okay. Right. Does she look Ethiopian or?
No, she doesn't.
She's okay. Lighter than Halle Berry, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
She looks biracial.
This is a tough system we live under. And I have a hard time processing through it every day. You know, the amount of confusion most non-white victims, you know, display. When I was in class, I was talking about it, and I was talking with this white girl, and we was basically discussing race, and she said that she wasn't racist, and I was asking, why are you not racist? She says, because I wasn't brought up that way. And the sad part is, she said that most racism is totally caused by ignorance. And I told her, you're not going to come and try and convince me that racism is somehow due to ignorance from white people. It is totally picked up through osmosis. I believe that it is something that they are taught when they're a kid. And I believe that it is something that they display publicly, not so much in a way to where the non-white victims are able to realize it, but in a way to where it caused confusion. Unfortunately, not only, if you talk about race, not only you will have whites to deal with, you will also have non-whites to deal with. And when I tell you all, when I was in class, both white and the non-white people had chewed me alive. It's like I was by myself. And most of us, when we are placed in a situation like that, we may not even know what to do. You know what I'm saying? When it's only you aware of the system and you just somehow talk about it, it can be a pretty tough, battle. Very, very tough battle. And the worst thing you can ever see is a white person being involved with a black person sexually. You know what I'm saying? And I have such a hard time when I'm out in public because I have white women hitting on me a lot. And the desperation is just so scary. It's like when I was at the Black Swan Club, and there was this white woman who approached me, and you know what I'm saying, I turned her away. Like, she just kept trying, and you should have seen the look on her face when I turned her down. And most white women, when they see two black couples that are, you know, looking nice, you know what I'm saying, what's going through their mind is, you know what I'm saying, we done gentrified these women, we done made these women the least desirable race of women on the planet, we done marginalized them, we done exploited them, we done put drugs in their community, we done made them ugly, and these women are still wanted by these men. You know what I'm saying? That's what's going through these women's minds. And that's sad, you know.
How old
is
you?
Truly sad. How old am I?
Yes, sir.
I just turned 24 October 29th.
Right on. I want to make sure we have one other person who didn't get an opportunity to ask a question. Caller at 1184, did you have a comment, what you heard from Ms. Schwartz? If anybody out, if you are listening, if you have seen the film, that would be grand to hear commentary from more folks. If you were able to catch the film, if there was a Q&A session for any of the folks who have seen a screening of the film where participants got to ask some questions or make some analysis about what they saw, that'd be interesting to hear as well. But 1184, did you have a question, comment, something you wanted to get in?
Yes. Greetings, everyone. I was almost halfway in a daze of sleep. Like, when you were saying, like, okay, Mrs. Schwartz, I was like, what happened? Like, you know, I'm actually kind of dazing off on that whole thing. Like the lady was saying, it's a sad reality of the confusion and the damage that's been, I think, done to that lady because of the lie and the abuse of being lied to and of having that carried on for that long period of time, and then all the interactions with the family. I mean, I get the impression that no one ever believed that lie. It was just like a tool. Like, it was just white supremacy, you know, like, just that's what they do. Like, you know what I mean? That's like part of what they do to be white supremacists. Like, just contrive something and just go with it for convenience. I find that, you know, that might be true about it, and that's crazy. That's just, I mean, really crazy, like, mental issues. And I remember you had a lady on the show before, and she was like some type of comedian or something like that, and she was a pretending adult. She was like a
Oreo experience.
Yeah. she reminded me of her in a lot of ways too, in some ways. Like in denial of her awareness of racism and white supremacy, and like playing a role, like she's been raised in that white quote unquote culture or mindset, customs and stuff. And it's like she identifies, it's like she wants to hold on to that, but at the same time she doesn't want to like analyze it or look at it and pick it apart or question it and stuff like that. I found it, you know, I found that in her too. It was just a confusing part. I could feel her like trying to hold on to like the prestige, but at the same time she's doing a movie, she's doing a documentary like that's supposed to be soul searching it or exposing the racial problem of racism, but it wasn't trying to deal with racism. That was just like just crazy that she could be that mixed up about something that she dedicated so much time to producing, you know, and not having like a race interpretation behind all of it. You know, bizarre is a word for it for me. But it's just, it's incredible how false these different cultural groups and white supremacy, the types of things that they fabricate. The thing I didn't understand was, did her stepfather, was she born before he married her mother?
I think she was born after their marriage.
Right, because I find it hard to believe that a male, and this black male used to come over their house and eat and hang out and stuff like that. I find it hard to believe that a male didn't sense like she must have had an affair. You know what I'm saying? When you have a child and the child is so strongly of a different ethnic mix than you, you know what I mean? As a male, I always had that concept that, you know, that things like that really stick out with a male or a female for that matter, probably. That to me is bizarre. And that seemed like, again, like not wanting to recognize it, you know what I mean? Not wanting to recognize the blackness of the person, maybe more than anything. Just a sick all around that part. Sad reality. That's all I really wanted to say.
Fascinating. If any of the other folks that chimed in, again, if anybody else got to see the film, that would be grand to hear any other feedback that you have. I did want to get in briefly. She is a victim. Be very clear about that. She is not white. I guess the two quick things that I would get in was she was talking about how she was accepted by the white people in her area. I don't believe that. When I say that, I can't just take her word for it, because I've seen too many examples where black people, and I mean like black people that are like Dick Gregory and Lil Wayne's complexion, Lupita Nyong'o, like no doubt about it, black people. I've seen too many examples where we are in the presence of white people and they're practicing racism and we're not aware. I've just seen way too many examples of that. I have been in that situation myself. So that is number one. And number two, I have seen way too many situations where white people reserve their comments, where they might be very explicit about, oh, no, I don't think she's white, or she, you know, has a touch of the tar brush or whatever. I've just seen way too many examples where even if they don't say it to your face, where they might make those comments to themselves. I can even give you an example. There was a class at the University of Washington. This was 2010. And there was a female in the class, and she said that she had a white parent, and I think it was Filipino. And she said her mom was Filipino and her dad was white. Now, if you see her, she looks pretty pale. You definitely would not look at her and think, you know, oh, man, you know, she looks like she's from Africa or she's Ethiopian or something like that. Like, she looked pretty pale. But she said this in the class. Now, some weeks later, I said it's been my experience that white people are very discerning, way more than non-white people, about whom they accept on their team. I said, if you just give everybody it was a black male who was running the class. I said, if you give everybody a sheet of paper with everybody's name that's in the course and just ask them, you know, to write down if they accept that person as white or non-white. And I said, I don't think you're going to get agreement. I think you're going to have some white people who reject some of these people who say that they're white. They're going to say, no, I don't think that this person is white. And that's exactly what happened. She was one of the people that there was not consensus in the class, that there were quite a few white people. They had never made any comments to her, anything rude, like, you know, oh, you are, you're not white person or whatever the case may be. You're Filipino, you're an Asian, blah, blah, blah. They didn't, you know, do anything like that. But when they got those sheets, they wrote down, no, she's non-white. And they were more than happy to explain. And then you could see she got defensive. She was like, wait a minute, I am a white person. And just the look on the white people who rejected her claim to whiteness, the look on their face, priceless. They did not care what she had to say at all. It was when somebody has stopped listening to you, like when you could tell that they do not care what you have to say about anything. That was the blatant. I mean, and they made no effort to hide it at all. Like, whatever you have to say is not worth used toilet paper. Talk as long as you want. I've made my decision. You're not white. I suspect that that could have been the case for her. But at the end of the day, like I said, I couldn't just take her word for it. And I would also base it on the exchange that we had around what was written in the New York Times. And her saying that she didn't think it was these white people rejected. The caller, I don't know if they're still here, but in terms of the caller saying that it felt like talking to a white person and some of the disagreements just didn't seem logical, maybe coming from her confusion or whatever the case may be, like that for me was an example right there. Like, I cannot believe that we're having this type of disagreement, which to me sounds like defending white people. Like, these white people weren't rejecting my whiteness. That statement where someone at her bar, this is supposed to be a celebration for her, saying it's great that we have some Ethiopian Jews here. I mean, that to me, it does not get any clearer. I am rejecting your status as a white person. I don't see you as a white person. I'm clearly making a joke. And maybe it was presented in the fashion of a joke, but I'm clearly making a comment that shows I do not just accept that you are a white person. And that's just that. And like I said, sometimes
you. Hang on one second.
Sometimes they will make those sort of comments in jest. But they're serious, but they'll just get away with it because they can say, oh, I was just making a joke, or I had, you know, something to drink, or whatever the case may be. But they do that sort of thing all the time. It even reminded me of Donald Sterling, where he said that you got white Jews and black Jews, and the black Jews have treated me like dog. That was the first thing that came to my mind when I read that statement. The other thing where people were saying, you know, that they felt sorry for, I did not feel sorry for her. I do not feel sorry for her. She is a victim, and I say all the time that we should have compassion, but this is a non-white person with a white parent. She is very pale. I don't think that she's treated like folks that are darker complexion, highly melanated. I don't think that she is subjected to the same sort of terrorism that they are. This person went to Harvard. This person went to Georgetown, is making films. I don't have a lot of sympathy and sitting around feeling bad for her and, oh, man, she's so good. I don't have that. You know, I might be wrong on that one. I might be in error, but I at least wanted to make sure that I got that out. I do not have that for her. I do see her as a victim. I'm not mad at her. I don't have beef with her. Obviously, I made points where I don't agree with her analysis of racism, but I definitely am not in the in the group where I felt bad for her. I felt really sad for her being confused about racism and what she had to deal with growing up being lied to by her white mom. And I will pause there. If again, if we have anybody, I'll check really see if anybody dialed in who has seen the film. Any of the folks that we have this with us, if there was a Q&A session attached to, oh, we got one more person that dialed in. The person at 1388, you should be with us as well. 1388.
Good evening.
Evening.
I haven't seen the film, but I do have a comment about having sex with white people. I think the sexual intercourse of white people is one of the most dangerous things that non-black people can do. But through research and just watching people, I kind of believe, I'm not sure if anybody can agree with me, but I've come to the conclusion that non-white people know the system of racial white supremacy, but they continue to have sex with white people because I think that they want to have offsprings of a mixed breed because maybe they don't like themselves. That's the conclusion I come to, because they know that, well, if you ever just growing up in school, the dark-skinned girls don't get any attention. I remember some show back a while before, somebody said, I think somebody said about a ring around the collar or something like that. I think it was some girl from Haitian on one of the shows, whatever the case may be. But the dark-skinned girls don't get picked first. They get looked over by the light-skinned girls first. So I think a lot of them want to have kids so that they have an offspring which is a lighter skin, because that kid may get preferential treatment from the system. And then I think that they live vicariously through the through their kids. And if anyone ever sees someone, maybe a dark-skinned woman or even a dark-skinned male also too, and look at them, how they interact with their kids, they walk around a little bit. I see a lot of them. They walk around with their chest out because their kid is light-skinned, quote unquote, with curly hair. I see a lot of young girls who had a kid by a white man or a Puerto Rican or someone, and they have the lighter skin, fair skin, whatever you want to call it, and long, well, stringy hair, and they're just constantly playing with the hair, you know, just playing with the hair, the young women. And like I said, I just think more so, I'm not sure if anybody agrees, but I really think it's more so they know that it's a system of racism out here, and that their kids may be subject to treatment also too, but they still think that they may get a little bit better treatment, and they know for certain in the black community, a light-skinned kid, where child, will be like God in the black community. And, you know, a lot of people don't want to say it, but it is true that some people look at the light-skinned kids in the black community and they just think that they're better than the rest or so. But me personally, I just think a lot of, you know, I just want to make a point that I just think a lot of the people who have sex with whites and have offsprings, I think it's a selfish decision because they don't want their kid to be subject to it. And at the same time, too, they want to live vicariously through their kid, and that they don't want their kid to, you know, or they just don't like, it was just anti-black, they don't like black. You know, they just don't want their kid to be black or something like that. And I see a lot of black men who date white women, like real dark-skinned guys date white women to have a fair-skinned kid. So, but I'll be my line.
Watch that word fair. Heard it twice in there.
I got you.
And also, no such thing as a black community. I think Mr. Fuller and even Dick Gregory, I've heard both of them comment on that regularly. Can't have a quote-unquote black community within the system of white supremacy. Any of the other folks that are with us have comments? Shani, I think she had said she tried to dial in or what have you. I hit all the lines that were on. If you dialed in to get a question in to Miss Schwartz, we had time constraints that we were working with, so I missed quite a few people. But if you have something you want to get in now, feel free, or anybody else listening in, any of the folks that are with us with a hand up, particularly
may I be heard?
Yes, sir. Did you see the film?
Yes, I already spoke, but I just have some commentary to make. Gus, as I was questioning her and listening to her responses, I was convinced that she was very codified in her responses and really codified in defending white people. I also thought to myself what Dave Myers' first black girlfriend told him, that your mom has really done a number on you. And I believe that she was not honest or fair in her commentary and her thoughts on the responses. I believe that some of the stuff that she was saying, she didn't really believe it herself, but I felt that because she was being very cautious and selective in her wording. She felt like she wanted to say the right thing, and that was defending white people. My thought was that tacky, tragic, and terroristic conception from her was a very tragic conception, and unfortunate she was the product of that. And from those births, if you're birthing children like that, they become very confused. And either she was confused or wanted us to believe she was confused. I'm still having some gray areas about that. I think a lot of times when guests come on and they appear to be confused, I don't necessarily think that they're always confused. I think that they want to give you the impression that they're confused, but there's more logic going on in their head than I think they want us to believe. No further comment.
Heard that word fair again.
FYI, at the end of the documentary, she reveals to the audience that her last name, Schwartz, actually means black in German.
She says Schwartz.
Correct. That means black in German. It means black. Schwartz means black. That's the meaning of the last name, black.
Yeah.
Schwartz. She was debating. Yeah, because she was debating, should she lose the Schwartz as her last name and just, you know, take on a new last name altogether? But she ended up keeping Schwartz as the last name because, after all, it means black, and it kind of ties it all together, her whole, like, self-discovery, so to speak. So Schwartz actually means black. It's a German last name.
Do you think that she was aware of that?
Yeah, she disclosed that information at the end of the documentary.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Schwarzenegger means black farmer.
Oh, make sure I get this in before, I just want to make sure I don't forget. I was going to ask her about the budget of the film, and she said that she did not want to disclose that. I thought that was interesting just because we've had a lot of folks who have done documentaries on the program, and I make an effort to ask purposely just because I think it's good to kind of get a range. Some of the people that have done these films, they said that they have had budgets that were over $100,000. Some of them have had budgets that were a lot lower, just to kind of get a range, and so that people know that that is something that, you know, shouldn't be out of your mind in terms of thinking that it's impossible to do a documentary film. But I did. That was something that I had. And she said she did not want to disclose that. I know she does have a Kickstarter page where she got about $25,000. I'm not sure if she, and I know she talked about that she got some grants from some other quote unquote Jewish foundations that I think gave some finances to help get the film done. But I thought that was important as well, that she did not want to discuss the budget for the film.
Can I ask you a question, Gus?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever thought about doing a documentary on the context of white supremacy?
Not particularly, because I don't really want to be on camera, even though I know you definitely could do a documentary where you don't have to be in front of the camera, but not really.
Okay.
I have a question. Does in her film she talk about her decision in choosing a mate, her husband, because I understand she's married. I haven't seen the documentary. How she came to that conclusion was in terms, because I always think the people that you marry is also says something about your consciousness as well, too. And my impression of her is that she sounded white and was codified in her responses, but I've heard some of the guests say who saw the documentary said she was married to a black person. Did she ever discuss how that came about?
No, she did not. Their marriage is actually veiled towards the end of the film. That's like the closer, along with her disclosure of what the meaning of her last name, Schwartz, means. You just see them getting married. They say the I do. the wedding consists of Jewish tradition, wedding traditions within their wedding, and that was pretty much it. I don't know the guy's name. You just know he's a tall black figure, attractive guy. That's it.
Then too, I think she made the decision when she was in college. What's really interesting was that she did mention that when she was in college, she was embraced by the black community. And so you can see from her various pictures and things like that, that she had really been not just embraced, but she decided to really engulf herself in black culture. You didn't really see too much of the white people, too many white faces, unless they were related to her afterward. Another point that I wanted to mention about the film is that despite her mother's deception, her biological father, the black guy, he got characterized as the bad guy. I mean, we know that's typical. But it was stated in the film that he had multiple children from multiple women, and he, too, was a married man and committed adultery. And I believe that he committed adultery at the same time. He was also married when he was committing the adultery with Lacey's father. And so she also mentioned, too, that she didn't have any connection to her biological father. They had communication. When she found out that her biological father was her biological father, they did attempt to make communications with each other, but then it fell off. She also had communication from what the film presented with one of his daughters, but that didn't last very long. So she doesn't really have a connection to the black side of her family, and she didn't really, the way how it's presented or represented in the film, she didn't really, that's not something she desired, and it didn't appear that she really worked hard to foster a relationship with that side of her family. It was more focused on the mother, well, her whiteness, and pretty much what she said. There was a Q&A, and what she did say was that this is not necessarily about race. She didn't want the focus to be on race. She wanted the focus to be on deception, especially family deception, because there was a point also in the film where she visited, once she found out about her being the product of an interracial, tragic sexual relationship, when she was in college, she went to therapy, and she specifically sought out a therapist who dealt with family secrets. And so what she did was every time she had a session, she would record her session with this therapist. So her emphasis was not on the racism aspect of it. It was more about family deception and how I guess it has a life of its own and how that affects the family.
And in my mind, I think the core of it is racism, although they don't want to label it as such. But I think the core of and the root of the problems that those conceptions are from or laced from racism. And the children, like Dr. Francis Press Wilson says, if you play with sex, the joke is on the offspring, and the offspring have a lifelong problem with that.
I have a question. Do you think she somehow realized she was black and she started to accept her black side due to the fact that she lacked acceptance from her white side? Or
in the film, she states that she began accepting herself as black when she was accepted into university. the university defined her as black. Therefore, she began to exploring this blackness. Other than that, she always said she viewed herself as white in a film.
I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting. You forgot to mention, remember at one point in the film, she dated a male who also was interracial. His mother was white and his father was black. They were married. And so he had mentioned, he's looking at her and he's like, Lacey, like, that's your father? And so she's like, yeah, this is my biological family. This is my biological father. I look the way I do because I have a Sicilian grandfather. And he was like, get real. And so she said that when she started dating him, I think this was a high school sweetheart, if I'm not mistaken. And so she said once he started talking about that, it started to kind of spark something off in her mind. Additionally, he even met Rodney. This guy, they have pictures of Rodney at the family home eating dinner at the table. So that is, it's beyond tacky. That is some trifling behavior her mother displayed. Like, you are inviting the man who you had an affair with in the same home, having dinner at the family table with your husband. That is trifling. Does it get any more trifling than that? So he's the one, I think, that really ignited that spark in her mind that maybe I do need to explore this. And he's even the one that said, you know what, I knew when I came to the home and I saw Rodney, I knew this man was her father.
I think even in that point in the documentary, she was still denying and she was still identifying as white, regardless of what he was telling her.
I haven't seen the film, just quickly, in terms of if she was embracing blackness because she was rejected by white people. The Q&A session that I saw, she said she got a lot of funding from white people, and it was a lot of white people there that she claimed were her friends and being close to her and happy about the film project. She, as I said, she got funding from a lot of quote-unquote Jewish foundations, I think, unless I've been misinformed. I suspect that these are white people. And based on her presentation here, I haven't read any evidence that there was rejection on the part of white people. She seemed to do a lot of protecting and defending of white people, in my opinion, while she was on the program. So I have not seen any evidence that her going to this black thing was about being rejected by white people.
Okay.
Yeah. Gus, I think it is, and I know you touched on this, but I do think that it is very constructive and important to place the foundation down with your definition of racism, white supremacy, because I think that if you don't, when you open up with your guests in the show, everything else starts to kind of get muddled around having some clarity to the definition of racism, white supremacy, and I think that it's a good idea that you do lay your definition foundation down when you have your guests. I know in the past that you have, but I think it's extremely important and constructive to lay that foundation down first, and then everything else is around that context.
Yeah, I thought her definition or lack thereof, and this is, again, this is somebody, and for me, again, goes back to why I don't, somebody's pressing buttons. I don't have sympathy. It's not like this person has lacked opportunities. This is someone who has been able to go to Georgetown and Harvard. And I also don't have sympathy because this is someone who grew up thinking that they were white. And it seems like a part of her getting into Georgetown was based on the photograph. And they said, oh, this is a black person. They classified her as black and sent her information to other black organizations. To me, that seems like, wow, this ends up being their representation for black people at Georgetown, with someone who's very pale, who does have a white parent. It just seems like white people are very good at showcasing and getting individuals who have the least melanin possible to be the representatives for black people. We'll get somebody who has a white parent and white grandparents and the whole nine, barely any connection to authentic melanin-dominant black people at all. We'll get them to be the representatives of black people, a la Halle Berry and some of the other illustrations. But just that's another reason why I don't really have a lot of sympathy for her, even though she is still a victim.
Thus, your assessment is absolutely correct. That's indeed correct, according to the doc. That's absolutely correct.
Also, during, there was a Q&A. During the Q&A, I noticed that the moderator, there were, I mean, first off, the crowd was filled with a lot of white people who classify themselves as Jews. It was a sprinkling of black people, including myself, and the other people. I would say was about a handful of black people there, and I believe that the moderator was practicing racism because there were black people, the very few black people who put their hands up in the audience. To ask Ms. Schwartz questions, they did not get acknowledged. But all of these white people, particularly older white people, and they were related to her in some way, shape, or form, or maybe connected to her, let me just say that. They were able to ask their questions. A lot of it, the question didn't really go deep. It was more about, I guess, aesthetics. Like one of the editors, she had brought on stage. He had mentioned that, you know, they presented the film in front of a predominantly white audience, and they presented the film in front of a predominantly black audience. And so, according to the responses that they got from the audience, because they said, of course, naturally, they did get different responses from the film. With the various audiences, and he said, according to that, that's how they edited the film. So I don't really know what that means. I don't know if they made the film to target more toward the white audience, or they made the film to give a more varied representation. So I think, in my assessment, I think it was edited to appeal to the white Jewish audience who predominantly filled the theater when we were there.
Well,
and who funded the film.
Is on that. And who funded the film, I think that's important as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's important. And you can always, your starting point should be follow the money. Wherever the money's coming from, that's where the, I guess, the representation of the what you see is going to be presented.
For the people who were at the Q&A, was her mom, Peggy Schultz, was she present? Or did, excuse me, did anybody hear a commentary on how the mom was presented, or what people, the viewers, ended up, what like impression people would be left thinking about the mom, given some of the things you all have shared?
No, mom was there. Mom
no,
was not
mom there.
I don't think did they ask any questions about mom?
They did ask the question about her mom, but it was an indirect question, but the question was mainly more towards her relationship with her biological father, her real father, and her as Lacey, the daughter, victim who was lied to.
Does anyone know if she's still going through therapy?
She did not specify if she was or not. No one asked that question.
Did you all get a sense when the dad, I don't know if this is in the film, but it's in the New York Times article where her white father, the person that she thought was her father, when he found out about this affair, he regarded it as the ultimate betrayal Did anyone get a sense of whether that was attached to the fact that it, because she had this affair with a black person, or just because it was an affair period, that he would have had the same sentiment even if she had an affair with a white person?
But I think the way he made it sound was like he didn't specify, okay, well, she had this affair with this black man and now I have this black child who I thought was not. He just said, well, you know, a child came out of this affair. As a result of the affair, a child was, you know, was born. You were born. And the father made some real slick comment at one point in time. So this was after Lacey, she's an adult, she approached her father to discuss the whole situation with her. And so they happened to be walking down the street. They were walking, what was it? They were walking their black dog. And so someone else in the street was walking two little white dogs. And Lacey had asked the question, and so the father had made this off comment about, oh, well, I think she said that they were married or something like that, or they were mates, or they were somehow the two white dogs were related to each other. And so the black dogs, you know how dogs are, they sniff each other. And so the father made an offhand comment about, well, is one of them cheating on the other? Are they planning to have an affair now? He made a real sly, slick comment about...
I was rolling at that point. I was laughing my ass off at that point.
I forgot what it was, but he made this comment. As soon as he saw the black dog approach the white dog, he was like, oh, well, are they having an affair or something, an illegitimate child? He made some really... really slick comment.
Just wanted to get in, since we have done, more than one program on this subject. My suspicion is that this is probably very common, like white chick, particularly, I'm talking about specifically white females going out and having sex with a black guy and getting pregnant. And making up whatever narrative that they want to make up, you know, I've got Italian grandparents or whatever, or he's got revitiligo or some nonsense. I suspect that this is very common and has been for a long time with all of the sneaking around that white women have done. Like I said, there's a lot of scholarship. We have done programs on this. We've even had white women come on the programs. But just the fact that this is the second program that we've done, and there's another non-white person, I get non-white person in this same predicament who grew up thinking that she was white, where her white parents had lied to her. And I don't remember all the particulars of it. I can get you her name if you all are really pressed about it. But I suspect that this is not that uncommon. Where white women particularly are doing this and then lying about it if they're married, just saying that, oh, it's my white husband's child or whatever the case may be, that white, just the white women just do not get the same level of scrutiny for their promiscuous, slutty behavior. It just doesn't get the same sort of regard in terms of people just always thinking of black females as being hypersexualized and doing all this catting around and sleeping everywhere. People just don't think of white women in the same regard. But I suspect that this is very, very common worldwide.
I agree, because the same behavior was going on during slavery and post slavery, aka Reconstruction era as well. So the behavior hasn't changed, and plus, the image of the white female is tied into maintaining the system of white supremacy, where the white woman is deemed as attractive, you know, innocent, pure, bullshit, you know, jargon, or she's just friendly, caring, you know, not aggressive, not malicious in any way, shape, or form, where she truly is. You know, that ties into the maintenance of racism, white supremacy. So,
and I think it would be interesting to have a white woman on who would be honest and candid about her experience from a childbirth from a black man, That would be interesting to hear and to dialogue with a white woman who has had a child by a black person, and what was her motive, intent, and what has been the experience from that conception. Have you ever, Gus, had the opportunity to reach out to someone who would be willing to share their experience from that kind of tacky, tragic, terroristic, dangerous?
Crystal Tyler was on the program last month. She had a child with a black person where she said specifically she wanted his genetics. Now, she didn't lie. But to my knowledge, she didn't go and lie about it and you know, try and pawn it off on somebody else. But she was just here last month.
Who was that?
Crystal Tyler. Crystal Tyler. She wrote the book The Wheat Money. And she was here, I think that was September, if memory serves. I think it was either September or October. I think it was September. But she was here. And yeah, that's what her book is all about, where she talks about all of this attention that she got because she was, quote unquote, dating black males when she was in like high school and even younger, I think. But she talks about it and how this was like a big problem. And she continued to do this, how she was dating, quote unquote, a black NFL player. And she like broke the window at his residence and the glass fell near his son and the police were called and they ended up taking him to jail for domestic abuse, where the white neighbors lied and said that he abused her. And then she moved to the Colorado area and she went to grad school and all this, got all these prestigious degrees and got this black crackhead. That's the way she describes him in the book. She got his genetic material. And that's the way she described it on the program. She said she wanted his genetics. She wanted his DNA to reproduce with and have a child. And he apparently is still consuming crack cocaine. And she talks about putting him out of the house when he is, you know, has fallen off the wagon and is no longer sober. But she was just on the program. She talked, that was, I think we spent almost the entire 3 hours talking about that.
So she was practicing racism and white supremacy in its highest form.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of you all were here. This was recent. This wasn't, you know, long ago. You'd have to give me a minute to kind of think through the archives if we've had other white women who have produced a child with a black male on the program. But I know that's a recent one.
And that he was a homeless felon, too. You forgot to mention that.
Mm-hmm. He was living in her, like, shed out in the backyard, like, literally.
Wow. So she came in and a white person saved the day again.
She was abusive. She was very vague on some serious questions herself, if I read correctly. He was a problem, too.
Well, I am still learning. Thanks again, Gus, for the show. I am out. Signing off.
Appreciate that. I think Dorothy Fardon, I don't know if she produced a child, but I know she was on the program. She's a member of the Nation of Islam. I almost get a chuckle when I mentioned that, but she's a white woman. She was married to a black male in the NOI. Wrote a book about that experience and all about white supremacy. She was on the program. You'd have to, like I said, give me a moment to jog my memory to see if we've had other white women on who have produced a child with a black person and, you know, are open public about talking about that and their motivations for doing so, at least to some degree. If I think of anyone else that we've had, we have about 3 minutes left. So if I think of it in the next 3 minutes, I will share. If not, I'll just post them online if anything comes to mind. Anybody have anything else they wanted to get in the last 3 minutes before we wrap things up?
Nope, nothing for me. I only just wish you saw the film before interviewing her. That's the only thing, because I think the questions you asked her tonight would not have been the questions you would have asked her at all. period, if you only saw the film first. But hey, that's life.
I do have a question for the host. Did she specify that she would have to leave early?
Yes, she said she was down to do 20 or 30 minutes, which kind of killed some of my motivation for the program, because that's such a short period of time in terms of folks being able to ask questions. And then in terms of really being able to say something of value, as opposed to just giving some real superficial responses to things. But she had said that she had 20 to 30 minutes that she could do. And they was trying to pick where she wanted to do her 20 to 30 minutes at during the broadcast. But she made that explicitly clear, as well as not wanting to discuss the financing for the film. I was going to get in, even though I wasn't a white woman specifically, we did have France Windance Twine. She is a black female. We had her on the program, and she wrote a book about this subject matter. It is not accurate, and those are her words that she revealed on the program. She said that the book that she wrote is not an accurate book about racism. So that right there, at least for me, tells you everything you need to know about the book and whether or not you should read it. But she basically did this study of white women who had children with black males in Britain. And what happened to them, if their family kicked them to the curb, if other white people castigated them for doing this, and how it changed their understanding of what it means to be a white person, if they decided that they were going to work against racism. I think she said from all the people that she studied, and this was like a longitudinal study where she went back over some years to study these people, that none of the people that she talked to, none of the white people, ended up dedicating themselves to fighting against racism. I think that did come out, but she was on the program. This is back in 2011. France Windance Twine. She actually has written quite a few books on racism. She's written about racism in Brazil and the UK, other areas. I think she has some more recent works as well. But we, if anyone is curious on pursuing that, white women producing children with black males, then that would be another one that you can check. I would check out the program, not the book, because the book was not very accurate, in my opinion.
According to that, you. That program was really, really good, by the way. I remember that vividly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Much better than the book. Much better than the book. right on. We did our three. We will be back a little later in the week. I'm trying to see if we can ride quick, get this white woman on the program. She is doing this college study. I guess the same premise that white people are ignorant about racism. However, she did concede that even if the problem is that the white people are ignorant, that, quote unquote, educating them about racism does not necessarily mean that they are not going to be racist anymore. And that's very rare that I hear a white person make that concession, even though, you know, I've been very clear that I reject the whole premise that this is the result of ignorance. But I did at least appreciate her being open about the fact that, hey, even if we do go that route, there's really not a whole lot of evidence to say that just giving them this information is going to stop them from practicing racism. She's a professor at one of the SUNY universities in New York, State Universities of New York. She agreed to come on the program, so I'm just trying to work the date. And some of this is just because I'm kind of with everybody else waiting to see how things are going to go down in Ferguson, because I do want to make sure that we're reporting and just paying attention to what's happening down there. My suspicion, the reports that I saw last week, they said that they thought the verdict was going to be announced today in terms of whether they were going to indict Darren Wilson or no. But obviously that did not happen. But it looks like it should be happening sometime soon. I would hope sooner than later, so we can just move forward with things. But I definitely plan on broadcasting once that goes down, particularly if anything noteworthy occurs. If anyone is in the Missouri area, again, I would just say be safe, be safe as possible. I would stick to what I said when it comes down, particularly now with the National Guard being there. I would probably make an effort to be out of town, especially if I had children, offspring that I was concerned about, to take a couple days, secure the residence and exit until things calm down a little bit, and then come back and, you know, continue to work to replace white supremacy with justice. But just be safe if you are a non-white person in that area. And definitely stay tuned. We'll be reporting as things unfold. Thanks.
Hey,
yes, sir.
Hey, I got one question for you. Have you seen the movie Interstellar yet?
Nope.
If you get a chance, check it out. And I think racism, white supremacy, I don't think it will end. And it's like you said, the two things that they do is by deceit and then by direct violence. If you just check it out and look at it and see it, and I think all white people think that way based off the movie. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but when you check it out, just look at it. Pretty good movie, but it's about genetics and survival, something Dr. Francis Cress Wilson talked about, and it's pretty clear in the movie that they believe in genetic survival.
Right on. I will check it out as I have time to get to it, but I appreciate that recommendation. I know we have a lot of folks who are into watching films to analyze, so check out Interstellar if you have the time, energy. Check that one out as well. As I said, we should be back a few days this week, just as soon as we can get this white woman on the program, and the whole, as I said, with Ferguson, definitely plan on broadcasting just to kind of cover and see what's going on with that. If you have any confusion, questions, gripes, feel free, drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, we are fundraising. Invest if you think the program is constructive. racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal is in the top right corner. If you are not feeling PayPal, drop me an email. We will get you a physical mailing address if you would like to invest to keep the program rolling. Thanks for everyone who participated. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Monday evening. Anybody who is on, do you all want to do the prayer to wrap things up? Cool in the gang. I will knock it out myself. Be safe. Be sober. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of racism. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to call on our ancestors for courage, focus, patience, and commitment to our creator-given assignment, replacing the system of white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. It has been time. Context of White Supremacy, signing out. Universal Man, Universal Woman, that is the goal. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Cows, signing out.
I'm a victim,
no
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
Goodbye.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.